Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Day it is here in the hills and hollers of what's left of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. This is the magic of October. I'm Bob Kincaid, here to close out the week with a little Friday on the front porch. And I'm awfully glad to be here, celebrating a bit today. Had my first bowl of non-clear soup. And what's more, Agnes let me have a couple of pieces of toast. Yes, toast. It's amazing how such plebeian, pedantic, pedestrian things can seem so like unto ambrosia when you have been absent or they have been absent from you for so long. Dang, it was yummy. Yes, indeedy. It is Friday on the front porch on the horn, and before we get going in earnest, a couple of program notes. Just a reminder, you know, this past Monday we had a Dr. Bill O'Brien Prism West Virginia American History chat session, and we will have another of those this coming Tuesday. I hope you will mark your calendars. There's data, there's information in this that you're not going to get anywhere else. I don't care where you look. You are not going to get this immersive examination of history anywhere else. So on Tuesday, we will be having a Prism West Virginia American History Lecture Series beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and running up until Rick Smith show. And if they feel like running over, we'll just kill the audio stream and then go, and everything will continue apace on the video stream, okay? Can we do that? Awesome. So, mark your calendars. And then, also next week, I will be gone Thursday and Friday. Thursday and Friday of next week, I will be gone. It is one of those gotta-goes. If I had been able to travel this week, I would have been in Washington, D.C. yesterday. But next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, will find me on the coast of Georgia and not with my toes in the sand. Now, this is a Coal River Mountain Watch matter that needs my attention, a meeting that we have to attend and which I have been asked to be the designated representative for. So that's next week. Tuesday, American History Seminar Series, Prism, West Virginia, and then Thursday and Friday on the road. Then the next week, there's no reason to think shouldn't be just normal, to the extent that normal is. Are you out there, Peter Godbolt? Anything other than a setting on a dryer. So there are those two things. Meanwhile, a couple of other things to point out. I want to extend a special thanks. Sometimes you go to the mailbox and things just happen. And this one came completely out of the blue from an anonymous contributor overseas, and I want to thank them profusely. I'm enjoying it right now. Having heard some time back that I enjoyed a couple of Cuban cigars while we were on the Lib Boat cruise last February, also through the kindness of an anonymous donor. I went to my mailbox, and lo and behold, what did I find? But, yes, some Cuban cigars. And I'm having one this evening for Friday on the front porch. If you can't enjoy a good cigar on the front porch, where the hell can you? So, that's... I was gobsmacked. Just absolutely blown away. And it is simply wonderful. So, Anonymous U, thank you, thank you, thank you very kindly. It is very much appreciated. I will note that we are behind rather significantly for contributions and donations beginning this month of October. This is the 7th of October. We complete the first week of October this evening and are nowhere within reach of what should be our regular fundraising goal. And toward that end, I had a note from our good friend John in upstate New York, who is willing again this month to step forward and match up to $50 contributions that are made toward keeping the lights on here. Thank you very, very kindly, John. It is sincerely appreciated. So for those of you who would like to see your money doubled, it is easily done by contributing at headonradionetwork.com. The PayPal button is there, as is the snail mail address. And up to $50, John in New York will match that contribution so that hopefully we might be able to reach the $100 mark this evening. That would be awfully nice. We just paid some bills, and we've got a lot more to pay. It's about 6 minutes past the hour, and it is Friday on the front porch. And, you know, Friday on the front porch has some lightheartedness to it. Maybe a little bit of silliness, a little bit of frivolity. And there's also a lot of serious stuff to go into this evening. But I thought I'd share a little reader with you that you might find interesting. From a national publication. As the fifth plate of his 10-course, $150 pre-feast tasting menu dinner was carefully placed on the manicured table in front of him, Cole Strauss Media Group CEO Tom Byatt reportedly told a colleague Tuesday that in order for the company to stay afloat in this adverse economic climate, staff layoffs would likely be necessary. The fact of the matter is, our financial outlook is just not what it used to be, and if we want to keep the lights on, we're going to have to start making some tough choices, said Byatt, cutting into a piece of seared foie gras subsumed in a rich pheasant consommé. Personally, I wish we could keep everybody, but unfortunately I'm in the position of having to decide what the best direction for our company is, and I don't see any other option than reducing our overall cost structure and finding some way to trim payroll. It is far from an ideal situation, but we have to cut corners somewhere, Byatt added as a second waiter arrived with a $110 bottle of Chateau Figeac from the wine cellar. That's just a reality of our business model. Following a 20-minute period in which the executive and his colleague sampled a lobster broth hors d'oeuvre, arriving compliments of the chef, and listened to the maitre d' explain how the lobster had been flown in from Maine that morning and subsequently boiled in 30-million-year-old glacial water flown in specifically for the occasion, Byatt reasoned that although it pained him to say so, his company could definitely stand to lose about a dozen people in sales and roughly another 15 or 20 in the marketing and production divisions. As the pair continued through lavishly designed plates of haute cuisine at a table situated near the window so that Byatt could keep an eye on his valet-parked 2011 Jaguar XJ, they discussed the unfortunate challenges of today's market and the tremendous stress placed on those at the management level to keep their businesses financially solvent. As you know, nothing about these layoffs is easy for me, said Byatt, lifting his arm so that a waiter could gently sweep tiny morsels of gourmet artisanal bread off the table with a stainless steel crumb comb. I'm going to have to go into the office Monday morning and tell Mark to tell these people that they're going to be let go, all while trying to maintain employee morale. You can imagine how heavily that weighs on me. But I think our remaining staff will certainly recognize everything I'm doing to keep us competitive, Byatt continued before deeply inhaling the aroma of a dry-aged bison filet mignon lightly coated in a truffle glaze and resting on a bed of imported fiddlehead ferns. I just hope they appreciate the kind of pressure I'm under. After consuming his dessert courses of lavender creme brulee and a caramelized brioche with a strawberry foam, restating his belief that payroll cuts are simply part of what a modern company has to do, and offering to have further talks on the subject of reducing company expenditures this weekend at his country house, Byatt thanked his colleagues for working with him to do right by this company, and snapped his fingers for the bill. "Oh, no, 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 please," said Byatt, waving away his colleague's hand and putting down the company credit card. "I got this." Now, to be fair, that ain't real. Nor is it. That's from The Onion. Headline, "Layoffs are necessary if we want to keep the lights on," says CEO halfway through tasting menu. So it's a joke, right? It's a real big knee slap and ha-ha. Except, it isn't really, is it? Satire and parody are sometimes the best reflection of on-the-ground realities. And you can't convince me that that dinner and that meal and that dialogue has not been replicated repeatedly in this country. I'm absolutely convinced of it, as a matter of fact, simply by virtue of this little clip from CNBC discussing Occupy Wall Street, clueless as ever.
And now we turn to this puzzling, bizarre protest going down on Wall Street and other places.
A lot of these guys miss the 60s, and they love the, you know, the grow their hair and let their freak flags fly.
Well, it's weird, though, Jim, because I would think that they're more aligned with Lenin than you are.
I actually think they're more nihilists. I don't know if they believe in anything other than what Stavrosian did with Dostoevsky.
What's going on here? Is this just your basic green, anti-capitalist, anti-bank, anti-Wall Street, anti-America demonstration?
If you're anti-capitalism, you kind of are anti-American, aren't you?
Shocking, today, President Obama expressed sympathy with these law-breaking protesters.
They like to sleep late. I mean, nothing gets started until night.
There's nobody on the street. If you had not opened up the newspaper this morning or saw the news before we walked in, you would not ever think that anything was going on down here.
Oh, look, there's guys that like to break windows. There's guys that like to just go down.
It's the storming of the Winter Palace. Just give me a little bit of Lenin here, maybe a little less Trotsky, and I'm in.
Do we think that whole Wall Street protest overdone, real, not real? Were there really a lot of people down there? Were there a lot? I could never tell.
See what I mean? How much difference is there between that reality and the satire of The Onion? Not very damn much in my book. Lawbreaking, anti-American, anarchists! More aligned with Lenin! These dumb bastards had best be careful because they don't want people who are aligned with Lenin. But they could damn sure make it a hell of a lot more attractive. They even went so far, some of these jerks, to cite Glenn Beck. Really? Glenn Beck? Well, they have in the past. Jesus! How far can the clueless extend? And I guess the seminal question for us, for you, for me, and it is not a rhetorical question, I would like your input on this. Are they really like this? Or is this something, as I noted last night, that is born of their deep and entrenched fears because of the fact that they know that they are predators? Some of the voices you heard in those clips, Larry Kudlow, Jim Cramer, Joe Kernan. You know, it's typical of the situation. if I, well, not that the right wing knows about me or us, shh, don't tell. But if I call, oh, I don't know, Jim Cramer a poopy head.
See, that's how those liberals are. That's all they know how to do is name call. They don't have anything to offer. Where are the solutions?
And yet at the same time, from Kudlow, Cramer, Kernan, monikers like bizarre, freaks, law-breaking, anti-American, anarchists. Well, if you're anti-capitalism, doesn't that mean you're anti-American? No, actually it doesn't. Because nowhere in the Constitution, nor mentioned in the Declaration of Independence, is capitalism enshrined. It just happens to be that that is the system that was put in place by the people who had all the money and all the power. Funny how that happens. You know, it's Donald Trump saying, well, they certainly do dress well. Donald, take that thing on your head and go down to Zuccotti Park and stand in the rain in your bespoke suit and see how it holds up. Honest to Jesus, you might find yourself wanting a little Columbia rainwear, which ain't cheap. You might want yourself some sturdy denim. There's a reason for this stuff. Maybe some Polar Tech fleece. But that's lost on them. And as Patty noted in an email last night, yes, to some extent, it is really and for true how they are. Those "we are the 1%" signs at the Chicago Board of Trade should never be forgotten. Nor should these monsters rubbing our noses in it. What's that? You're choosing between medicine and food? Oh, too bad you're not like us. I tell you what, it really makes a difference when your lobster's boiled in 30-million-year-old glacial artesian water. Oh, my goodness, look at those bizarre freaks outside. Jeebus. But make no mistake, the right wing doesn't, well, maybe it's still right wing, doesn't have a lock on weird and clueless. I offer you at this time, since it's Friday on the front porch and we're being a little bit lighthearted, I offer you none other than Jane Hampshire appearing on RT, Russian TV, which turns out to be a darn fine channel, really. You know who they need? They need me. They need them, an Appalachian hillbilly redneck. Ah, there we go again. Now, for some reason, she showed up on the Aljana show to talk about Occupy Wall Street. And this just beats cat's effing. Okay? It just does.
Well, the Occupy Wall Street movement has now sprung up in cities across the U.S., including Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, Boston, and Columbus, Ohio. And in Canada, protests are being planned for later this month in Toronto. Now, Anonymous, the hacktivist collective, continues to show its support, calling this our Tahrir Square.
Hello. We are Anonymous. If you have not heard about our brothers and sisters on Wall Street, we are currently experiencing our own Tahrir Square moment. However, this is not enough. We have other cities that we, the people, must occupy peacefully to let the world know the people are winning. Next month marks a momentous shift in our history. Everyone, everywhere will be occupying their towns, their capitals, and other public spaces.
Now, the numbers may still be small outside of New York. The anonymous video claims that Occupy Wall Street is already in 30 U.S. cities. So at this point, it seems clear that these protesters can no longer be ignored. But how much more is it going to take to see real change come because of what they're doing. Joining me to discuss it is Jane Hampshire, founder of FireDogLake.com. Jane, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. And at this point, seeing the massive numbers that we saw come out in New York over the weekend, the fact that this is now spreading to Boston, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, is there any question in your mind that this movement is growing?
I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind that it's growing. On Thursday, we also see the beginning of the October 2011 demonstrations, the occupation of Freedom Square here in Washington, D.C. So it's going to be brought right to the doors of our elected officials at the nation's capital.
Okay, so far so good.
I'm happy that you mentioned that because you're right, October 6th, there are going to be people here in Washington, D.C. At the same time, Van Jones is here right now. There's another progressive conference going on. So how do you get it to the point where all these groups can really unify?
Well, I don't think you want them unified. In fact, I think one of the...
You got that? I don't think you want them unified. Not because unity's bad. Standing together, shoulder to shoulder, all of that. That's bad. That's bad. This is where we have to... Got to do this. Yeah, this is where this comes into play.
All aboard!
Yeah, so go on, sing it, Jane.
Silliest things to happen in the past few days is the move on Van Jones attempt to co-opt the energy that is at the anger at the banks on behalf of the Democratic Party. I'm sorry, but when you've had control of the federal government for the majority of the past 3 years, it's really kind of ribald to suggest that this is all the Republicans' fault and that somehow you're entitled to co-opt this energy.
Ribald? Don't you mean ribald? Oh, I don't know. I'll get some dictionary definition in a minute. But so, if I understand Jane Hampshire correctly, Democrats, even though it's Democrats who are speaking out in favor of Occupy Wall Street, Democrats like, Dennis Kucinich, and it's the people who have traditionally been allied with the Democratic Party. That's bad? Now, I'm just trying to be realistic here. Who has stopped anything from happening in the Senate? Yeah, who's holding up all the judicial nominations? Whose party said our number one goal is to make sure that Barack Obama is not reelected? Now, this is not in... I come not to praise Obama or Democrats, but this is just nuts. This woman's off the rails in a desperate search for relevance. I mean, this is just silly. Did you watch Van Jones' speech? I did. Are you familiar with Van Jones' work? I know you are, and I am. And yes, he was in the Obama administration for a time, but of course he was thrown under the bus at the first whiff that Glenn Beck, the Beckerhead, might start saying more nasty. And he called him a communist, so he had to go. The conference that she's discussing is the Take Back the American Dream conference, hosted by the Campaign for America's Future. I've been to some of those. Unfortunately, they didn't have a radio row anymore because they've run out of money. So I wasn't there. But I've even seen Jane Hampshire swanning around that conference in years past. But suddenly it's inappropriate for other groups to endorse and support Occupy Wall Street? Isn't that what Occupy Wall Street is trying to do, is to grow in its numbers and in its power and in its base? Gee, many.
until some serious self-reflection happens on the part of Democratic leaders about why we're in this state and why they haven't done any more about it, I don't think that scheduling their own competing protests the day before rather than trying to help the actual protesters out who have brought this to the national attention.
It wasn't a competing protest. Jesus, how long has the Take Back America conference been scheduled? I know at least a year. But Jane's off her meds, and whatever happens inside her skull is reality. God damn, Jane, don't take the brown acid.
Is either legitimate or morally justifiable.
All right, so you think that they're just co-opting, and riding the wave on their momentum. Well, in that case, do you think that they should be completely separate? Do you think that the protesters that are part of Occupy Wall Street should...
No, don't ask Jane for a solution.
Denounce Van Jones and denounce MoveOn.org?
Well, I think that they should denounce Democratic politicians like Donna Edwards standing up there like she wasn't part of the Congress that has basically sat there and rubber-stamped everything the president wanted to do that's extremely Wall Street-friendly. I mean, it really is insidious, if you think about it, that there are people out there...
Yeah, that sure was Wall Street-friendly when Donna Edwards and a bunch of other House Democrats, when we had the majority... passed the Employee Free Choice Act and did it in damn near record time and sent it toddling over to the Senate to die. And who killed it? Yes, there were some dinos involved. Blanche Lincoln, Ben Nelson, Mary Landrieu. There were dinos involved, but you know what? Those three couldn't have pulled it off without a whole boatload of people whose only purpose in life is to say no, no matter what good might come for the country. At this point in time, it's hard to look at Jane Hamster and think that she's anything but... some sort of cloaked version of the, she's a Republican with a cloaking device. She's a Romulan. That's what it is. First Star Trek reference of the evening. Jane Hamster is a Romulan. Because, if you remember the original Star Trek, no one had ever seen a Romulan until that one episode. And generally, through the next incarnations, the only thing you ever saw of a Romulan was asshole and elbows running away, because they're sneak thieves. They operate in the dark and still of the night. They operate by the shiv and the blackjack and the cut purse and the cut throat. They never come at you face on. And that's the way, Jane Hamster is. Now, I'm sorry if any of you are big Fire Dog Lake fans. I'm not. Because this woman's agenda became clear to me a long time ago. And to suggest that somehow Occupy Wall Street would be far better off if people would just stay away from it is the height of lunacy. Occupy Wall Street, the October 2011 movement, all of these things need more people, not less people. We need to be convincing middle America sitting on its couch while it still has a couch and a house to put it in before they lose them too. But not in the brown acid world of Jane Hamster. No, hell no. Because, she's smarter than the rest of us. And we just need to keep our numbers small. Move On needs to be quiet. The Campaign for America's Future needs to not say anything. And what they should have really done is canceled the conference that they had scheduled for a year before Occupy Wall Street was ever even a twinkle in Anonymous's eye. Right? Yeah. It's interesting. There's some reality. There's some reality at work here. Let's just take a quick look at what the Campaign for America's Future is saying. Now, this is the same people who hosted the Take Back the American Dream conference. This is a piece by their executive director, Robert Borisage, who has not been shy in criticizing the pro-corporate bent of the Obama administration. I've never known the Campaign for America's Future not to be critical of that particular fascination. Bob Borisage wrote today, "Once Occupy Wall Street demonstrations started to sweep across America, the mainstream media began to pay attention and sounded a chorus of criticism. The movement was disorganized. It had no agenda. It wasn't organized like the Tea Party. Fox News trotted out ace reporter Geraldo Rivera and his mustache, really, to charge that European anarchists, paid illegal aliens, and out-and-out leftists were behind the innocent kids." Herman Cain led disapproving Republicans, calling the movement un-American when he should have been celebrating what it was doing for pizza sales. Oh, nice one, Bob. "Virtually everything said about this movement is wrong. Stand back, take a clear look. Every politician should understand one thing. This is coming at you, and you must decide whose side are you on? One, moral clarity." I'm going to read this whole damn thing. "Occupy Wall Street has no policy agenda, but it has utter moral clarity. The demonstrators have built an island of democracy in the belly of Wall Street. The bankers looking down on them would be on the street had not taxpayers bailed them out. And now they are confronted with students sinking under student debt, with no jobs, homeowners who are underwater and can't find mortgage relief, workers desperate for work. No one is confused about the message. Wall Street got bailed out, Main Street was abandoned. The top 1% rigs the rules and pockets the rewards, and 99% get sent the bill for the party they weren't even invited to. Golly, that sure sounds like the Democratic Party co-opting on..." Not really, does it? Two, nonviolent discipline. "That moral clarity was dramatized when the demonstrators stayed disciplined in the face of police provocation, including pepper spray in the face. The movement did not begin to sweep the country until people saw the police protecting Wall Street's banksters by assaulting peaceful protesters. Suddenly, this wasn't a disorganized ragtag gathering. These were citizens under attack for exercising their rights. That struck a powerful moral chord. Three, a rising protest. Across the country, people have responded to this clarity. Unemployed kids rallied to their side. White-collar workers stopped by for lunch. Suburbanites came in to share. On Wall Street, Liberty Square became a tourist center. Unions and national progressive organizations marched in support without pretending to speak for the demonstrators. For progressives, this surge of protest began building months ago when thousands of people rallied to take over the Capitol building in Madison, Wisconsin to protest Governor Walker's attempt to crush worker rights." Oh, by the way, before I go any further, you know how Snot Walker said that Wisconsin is broke and that's why he had to destroy public employee unions? You remember that? Yeah. Well, maybe not so broke as we thought. It turns out that $60,000 of taxpayer funds were recently spent to provide something like 120 iPads to the Office of Economic Development, you know, because those, well, those laptops are so recherché. Yeah, $60,000 worth of iPads purchased with Wisconsin taxpayer money because, you know, it's a bad thing to actually have a journeyman electrician rigging the lights in the auditorium and stuff, right? Yeah, got it. Bob Borisage continues, it built over the summer as thousands turned up at town meetings and sobered legislators with their demand for jobs, not cuts. The Washington Post suggested that unions and national organizers were resentful of Occupy Wall Street, but in fact most were buoyed by the energy unleashed the moral challenge posed. In many ways, organized labor in this country, and these are my words, not Bob Borisage's, organized labor in this country has been moribund. Wisconsin was a clarion call, as was Ohio, and New Jersey, and Maine. A call to get out of the seats, on your feet, and in the street. And while the book that so many people worship says, "And a little child shall lead them," no, not little children, but certainly young adults, which is really the key and critical aspect to any success. There is a reason young people are taking to the streets. If I was one of those young people, I would be there too. I'd be there now, and I'm an old fart. At least by their lights, I still feel young. Well, at least everything except my guts. There's a reason they're the ones in the street. Because it is their world, their future, that these tired, laced-up, Oxford-wearing, Brooks Brothers-clad, tidy-whitey, strangled oligarchs and plutocrats on Wall Street are screwing up. It's not that far different from the late 1960s, as young people with draft cards that had lottery numbers on them began looking at, wait a minute, my fat's in the fire, I don't want to go over there, and began the process of demanding that the United States government stop effing up their future. That's what it boils down to. I want young nonconformists in the street. Hopefully, eventually, they'll get some young conformists in the street. Because it's their world we have screwed up, and their world that Wall Street continues to screw up, and will continue to screw up without let or hindrance. Unless they make their objections known. Give us your hummus, your patchouli, your thundering drum circles yearning to be heard. Get out and go. Because it is their world. It is your world. You out there, Cassie? I know you occupied Trenton. Good on you. I know there are young people who listen to this program, even if I don't hear from them a lot. Out of your seat, onto your feet, and into the street. And that's not the old fart telling you what to do. That's the old fart begging you. We'll do everything in our power to support you, but it is your world. If you're 20 years old right now, you've got a reasonable chance of seeing three quarters of this century. A babe in arms, newly born, has a decent chance of seeing the next one. Dick Cheney's not. Donald Rumsfeld won't. George Bush won't. Barack Obama won't. I won't. Much of the Horn audience won't. But you will. And what you do now will determine what that next century is.
Will you stagger into the next century, coughing, wheezing, and choking on more toxins in the air? More pollution, more filth, more carbon monoxide, more carbon dioxide, more sulfur dioxide, more mercury raining down into our lakes, our rivers, and our seas. Filthy crude oil and tar sand extractions leaching out and spreading over the countryside. Will that be the world you walk into? And a world in which the people who do that to you are paid by the government to do that to you? Is that the world you will walk into? If you do not wish that to be the world you walk into, then for the love of God or any other thing that is holy, out of your seat, on your feet, into the street. Sorry about the little digression there. Bob Borisage continues, pundits dismiss Occupy Wall Street for not having a clear agenda. They're told to turn their protests into political demands. Some offer suggestions of what they should advocate. Infrastructure investments, says Paul Krugman. A speculation tax on banks. Home mortgage relief. General debt jubilee. The press wonders if Occupy will become the left-wing Tea Party and run Canada. No, it'll not become the left-wing Tea Party because it has been originated by young people who learn to spell. Who will not carry signs in Massachusetts that say, if Brown can't do it, Browning can. The press wonders if Occupy will become the left-wing Tea Party and run candidates in elections as if left-wing Koch brothers were orchestrating the protests. But this is silly. Occupy Wall Street is already a political steamroller. Without an agenda, without an electoral operation, without a slate of candidates, if it continues to grow, it will force every national politician to decide whose side he or she is on. Are you with the banks or with the 99%? And prove it. Reporters will ensure the question gets posed. Voters will be interested in the answer. I find this next paragraph especially interesting in light of the fact that Jane Hamster says that the Campaign for America's Future should have just canceled its meeting, and that somehow the Move On is trying to co-opt Occupy Wall Street for the Democratic Party. Bob Borisage writes, this is a question that discomfits the White House, as Vice President Joe Biden admitted, since the administration bailed out the banks without reforming them. It is a question that exposes Republicans, particularly Tea Party Republicans, the ersatz populists who brayed against the bank bailout in the election and then have worked tirelessly to roll back any reforms, gut the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and reopen the financial casino. It is a question, as the demonstrators show, not simply about the banks. The demonstrators demand action on jobs, and they want Wall Street to pay us back, not cuts in Medicare or student loans or schools. And these challenges are likely to grow more stark. Mass unemployment is continuing. More and more Americans are losing their homes. More kids are graduating from school into the worst jobs seen in decades. That's seen with an S-C, not an S-E-E. Big banks are in increasing legal and financial peril for their pervasive fraud and abuses in the housing bubble. Independent attorneys general like New York State's Eric Schneiderman have launched investigations. Investors are collecting on lawsuits. If this economy continues to stagnate or slow, which seems increasingly likely, the banks like Bank of America are going to go looking for another bailout, and once more every national politician from the president on down will have to decide whose side they are on. Golly, that sure does sound like Democratic Party agitprop, doesn't it, Jane Hamster? Freaking idiot. Bob Borisage closes, writing,
Historically, when America has reached the levels of extreme inequality and corruption that it now witnesses, popular movements arise to demand change. The populist movements of the late 19th century took on the robber barons, unions, left parties. Huey Long and his Everyman a King movement pushed Roosevelt from the left in the 1930s, and now, even as pundits were wondering where the left was, the eruption is beginning again. Will this movement be a factor in the 2012 elections? It already is. Will it make clear demands? It already has. Whose side are you on? Wall Street or kids in the street? The top 1% or the 99%? It doesn't get clearer than that. Jeebus. But the Democratic Party's trying to co-opt it. Bullshit. You know, that is so patently, such a patently ignorant statement. God Almighty, these are young people. What does Jane Hamster want them to do? Go join the Greens? So that their political power can be forever neutered? Well, actually, yes, she probably does. Me? I still believe in the Democratic Party of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Call me an anachronism. I want people of goodwill. I want young people of goodwill. Young people unwilling to toe the line and hew some party path to come in and demand that the party change itself from within. It can be done. Say what you will about the teabaggers, they did succeed in running every last reasonable human being right out of any possibility of being electable. The teabaggers did shift the Republican Party so far to the right that Mussolini would need goddamn binoculars to find them. It can be done. But it is done with unity. It is done by standing together. And not by some sort of BS allegation that it's being co-opted. Go ask a kid in Liberty Square whether he feels co-opted or not, or whether she feels like she is being pressured to be more... what's the difference, really? I played the audio a couple of nights ago from Herb Cain. I don't have any facts to back this up, but I believe they're just trying to divert attention from the failed policies of Obama. There's not a hell of a lot of difference between Herb Cain saying that and Jane Hamster saying the same thing. If there is, you tell me what it is. It is Friday on the front porch. But I had to get that out there. Just had to. Because this is what jeopardizes Occupy Wall Street. Conduct like hers. The derision of the right wing we can deal with because they're the right wing and it's what we expect of them. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. They're in the laugh at phase. Kind of begged to be said. What else do we have for Friday on the front porch? Well... You can always count on the right-wing religion industry to just... I mean, when you think things have gotten to their looniest, they get a little loonier. I could save this for Wednesday, but it would be stale by then, because, you know, the right wing is having its little clavern right now.
hosted by the American Family Association and a couple of other sick groups, the Values Voters Summit. Featuring, of course, Texas Governor Rick Save a Pretzel for the Gas Jets Perry. Ice cream. Tamales. See ya. He was introduced there by a right-wing religion industry member from the First Baptist Church of Dallas by the name of Robert Jeffress, who was doing his best to put a lot of distance between good, godly, upstanding, God-fearing Rick Perry and that heathen cultist from Massachusetts.
Decision for conservative evangelical Christians right now is going to be, do we prefer somebody who is truly a believer in Jesus Christ or somebody who is a good moral person but is a part of the cult? And it's not politically correct to say, but it's true, Mormonism is a cult. And for those reasons, besides Governor Romney's lack of consistency on social issues, I think Rick Perry is the most electable.
Now, this guy's a Southern Baptist, and he's talking about cults? Pot, meat, kettle. Kettle, pot. But, no, this is good stuff. Keep talking, Brother Jeffress. Keep talking. Hallelujah. Handle us a serpent. Drink some strychnine. Roll on the floor. Speak in tongues, why don't you, brother?
And when I was watching it, I did not take that he was booing the soldier before because he was gay, but booing the position that the soldier was taking. So I think there's certainly a room for debate on that. I think all of us are grateful for any man or woman who serves in our military.
Long as they're not homos.
Regardless of their sexual orientation.
Would you agree that gay service members who are public should be prosecuted?
Well, I believe we ought to obey the law of the land, whatever that law is at the time. And I do believe that there is a good reason for keeping the tradition of not having homosexuals serve in the military.
The tradition of not having homosexuals serve in the military. Because, you know, up till now, there never has been one. Never. Not one. Certainly not... certainly not the Marquis de Lafayette. Certainly not that. Oh golly, there were a couple of them. There was a Polish guy. There was a German guy. American Revolution. You know, one brought his own boys with him. Yeah, I don't need any sons. Guys, whatever, pals. Just gay. No big deal. They're gay. They fought like they fought like whirling dervishes. But no, there's never been any gay people in the military. No. Never. Not one. Even those veterans that Peter Gottbold interviewed several years ago on Strictly Confidential, talking about, you know, being gay in the military, they weren't really. They were either not really gay, they were just making it up, or they weren't really in the military. Or maybe they weren't really gay and weren't really in the military altogether. These poor, clueless jackasses. Yeah, this guy's a real winner. This Brother Jeffress. He says Islam promotes pedophilia. He says violence by Muslims is in accordance with what the Quran teaches because it's a violent religion. Poor old Rick Perry's campaign had to come a run, and it's bad enough when Rick, what did the Wall Street, or somebody say, no, it was Fox, when Rick's out there vomiting all over himself in a debate, it's bad enough, but now he's, stop helping, Brother Jeffress, stop helping! Because Rick Perry's official spokesman, Mark Miner, had to come a running out and say, Rick Perry does not believe Mormonism is a cult. He just believes that now let's just not go into it. Oh, yeah, this Jeffress guy is a real clown. He says 70% of the gay population has AIDS. He says it's a fact, it's a gay disease, so there's reasonable doubt to exclude gay, it's perfectly reasonable to exclude gays from the military. Yeah, you know, get a net. Meanwhile, I was reminded by Maura earlier today that not only is today the 10th anniversary of our long national nightmare in Afghanistan, but as we heard Brother Jeffress's, you know, that follower of Christ, as we heard his words, it bears remembering that this is the night that America learned the name Matthew Shepard. This is the anniversary of that name becoming synonymous with bigotry, torture, torment, and murderous homophobia. It was 13 years ago. It was 1998 when he was beaten and left for dead, crucified on a fence. He was found the following day. Jesus. Yeah, what did he say from the cross? Yeah. Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. The only problem is, these jackasses do know what they do. And they mean to do it. They like to do it. Here be monsters. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
I'm Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Four minutes past the hour, this second hour does indeed begin. And I hope it will persist with your calls, your comments, your thoughts. This is Friday on the Front Porch, and it is Conversation Radio. Two damned fine ideas, or damned fine reasons, not to leave me just to filibobster my way through this Friday evening. Let's do go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well... This kind of dovetails in the reason I called. I won't say what I think of dear old Jane, because it would involve swearing and that.
Well, I think...
when you do that on the air, I'm going to be a good girl.
Yeah, and you know, picking on the mentally deficient is just, you know, not something that we like to do.
However, her claim that there is, there are very few people involved. People, go to today's show post. See, Agnes sent me the post and I jumped it. I saw a few things on the net and I said, oh boy, Susan's gonna go to town. So go to today's show post. You're in the show post. You're going to find a picture. Not the normal one that everybody sees when you go to the main site, but if you click on the actual post, inside the post, there is a picture of an Occupy Portland demonstration.
Okay.
Well, let me put it this way. They literally couldn't get all the people in the picture. It went on for about a block and a half more. the town that turned out 75,000 people to see Barack Obama once, May Day. Well, we're at it again. And, it's coast to coast, and we are following right along and supporting the guys on Wall Street.
Yeah.
In other words, we're not going away.
Man, that's a bunch of people.
A whole bunch of people, yeah. And that's not even anywhere close to all of them.
just for those who are familiar with the lay of the land out there, what street is that, do you know?
That's the Portland Theater. Yeah, God, I can't remember the, it's in the, I can't remember. My brain is a sieve when it comes to directions.
That looks like one of those old, grand old movie houses there, the Portland
Theater.
Yeah,
it is. It's, I think it's,
Well, doggone it! It's a pity that David in Tennessee isn't out watching the baseball game tonight. He'd recognize it immediately.
Okay.
Well, no worries. I mean, it looks like a pretty broad thoroughfare through downtown Portland.
Oh yeah, it is. It's just it's gorgeous.
I mean, it looks like it's about 11th Avenue. It looks like if you count vehicle widths. It looks like it's about six vehicle widths broad.
Yeah, it's.
And it's filled with human beings, sidewalk to sidewalk.
Oh yeah, and it goes on for a block and a half around the corner, according to a poster. It is just, well, as I put in the post, message to the one percenters: have you got the message yet? If you haven't. If you are too selfish, scared, or stupid, guess what? We're not going away.
Indeed. The momentum must be maintained.
Back. Yeah. And I saw some YouTube video of the, I'll be putting that up as soon as I can. YouTube video of the demonstration in Austin, and that looked like they had a lot of fun. In fact, there are people sleeping out. I saw a picture of some people sleeping out at night in front of the State House in Austin.
Well, that's what occupying means.
Yep. But in Austin, that's Rick Harris country. You wouldn't think that. Get away with that. I thought that.
Oh, Rick
Perry.
No, that's not Rick Perry country
Rick Perry.
At all. Not at all. He went to college over at A&M, you know, that Cal College, and, you know, he was a cheerleader, just like George W.
Yeah.
Austin is not Rick Perry country at all, except for the fact that he has to go there to be governor. It's an enclave of decency and even liberalism, and, it also happens to be the seat of government, which makes the occupation and the march all the more important.
Maybe what they ought to do is go take over the Alamo and drive the point home.
Well, that's in San Antonio.
Well, it would still take the point home.
It's a long walk. It's a long walk from Austin, Susan.
Well, yes, I understand that. Austin, Texas being a big state, I'm thinking of the symbolic. Message.
I don't think I'd want to overtake the Alamo in light of what the Alamo was about.
Yeah.
It's got some bad juju floating around it.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say though is to people who are trying to say that this is just nothing, that's piddly little thing, it's coast to coast people. It's in over 200 cities and growing. Every time the cops in some city unlimber their nightsticks or their pepper spray, which they do with distressing regularity, and the protesters respond with trained, complete, and nonviolence, it grows geometrically. More people, and more places. Wise up, folks. wise up.
Indeed. And to anybody who, it doesn't bear going over the ground again. But let's leave the mockery and the derision to the one percenters.
Yeah. They're going to end up eating those words because their country has turned on them.
Well, I will to be brutally candid. It is very important that we take note of the fact that this movement has to, you know, it has to have some element of politics to it. It is impossible to ignore. And all these people in the streets had better, I hope, be ready to, because, you know, you can register to vote at 18 now, and have been able to for quite some time. And I know I'll probably get some pushback on it, but I hope everybody doing this is a registered voter who is ready to go and, you know, video game voting notwithstanding.
Exactly.
Make their voices heard.
Now, here's another thing. There's been, I know I've heard people say they don't have, you know, they're just out there making noises. There's no demands, no nothing. Okay. Also on the main Home Corn website is a video of the statement. But here's something that just blows me away. These people in Liberty Park, there's over 10,000 of them there. And they were interviewed on Keith Olbermann's show. The people who co-wrote the document that was read on his show as to how...
what they want.
Not what they want, why they were there. They're not at the point of issuing demands. But here's the thing. These two people came on the show and they explained the process that went into determining what went into that document. These people are operating under what is as close to Athenian democracy as it's possible to get.
Absolutely. Let's remember, democracy is something of which this government and that particular 1% culture is terrified. There is no democracy inside a boardroom. There is certainly no democracy at a corporate shareholders meeting.
Uh-huh. Now,
and in point of fact, you know, I mentioned Susan that we're going to be having another Prism American History chat on Tuesday. Dr. Bill and I were talking after the program closed last Monday, and he said, Bob, and you know, he's just, you know how just daggum brilliant Dr. Bill is.
Oh yeah.
He said, Bob, did you know? Because we were talking about Occupy Wall Street and Law and Order and things like that. And he said, Bob, did you know that John Adams said that the best way to keep America from being a democracy was to have a law and order government, and that's part and parcel of why the Constitution exists? I feel like I need to repeat this time after time after time after time, Susan. The Constitution of the United States is not only not a democracy, it is inimical to it.
Yeah.
And so what, you know, one of the things that maybe we will see arise out of Occupy Wall Street and the entire movement across this country is a demand that finally, just maybe, it might be a nice thing to try. Now, just like that freak on CNBC said, well, you know, it's anti-American to be anti-capitalist. Well, to the same extent, as an informed individual, my stomach does a little flip-flop now every time I hear Democrat or Republican, either one, say, well, you know, our democracy. Oh, kiss my butt. We don't have a democracy. We've never had a democracy. We are inimical to democracy.
And all that is the same sort of lip service that somebody who only shows up in church on Christmas and Easter has for Christianity.
Yeah. Okay, now, if you want to find out why these people are down there, their official statement, and or if you just want to have ammunition to use, you know, in arguments, this is a very clear and concise, I practically have it memorized. It's a YouTube video. You can access it through the main horn site. It's entitled Media Too Corrupt or Too Dense to Understand Occupy Wall Street. That's the title because Oberman came right out and said that on the air, which I thought was great. And then he proceeded to read this 4-minute statement. And it's concise, to the point, and it explains what they are there for and why they are there. And it's brilliant.
Good deal.
I recommend people watch that video a couple of times. You'll find yourself mesmerized by it. Because they're saying everything you've been thinking. Not violently. They are saying it logically, concisely. And they're saying, this is wrong. You guys are wrong. We're here to put it right. And we will stay here until it's right.
And therein, you know, therein lies the challenge. All right, Susan, thank you very much.
You're more than welcome, and I will keep posting stuff.
I appreciate it. You have a lovely weekend, dear.
You do. Love to the family.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Go over to headonradionetwork.com. Look at American Autumn is the post. The photograph that Susan posted of the march in Portland. It's pretty stunning. Now, granted, it's Portland, and they're supposed to be liberal and progressive. But still, it's a matter of being willing to get out of seat, onto feet, and into street. And they did. And as Tim reported from L.A. Last night, it happened there. Andy has reported from San Francisco. Haven't heard about Columbus yet, but we've got listeners there who can certainly speak to the issue. Mark talking about what's going on in Florida. It is happening. It is, you know what? There was even a statement, I'm going back to the phones just in a second, but there was a statement issued from, get this, Occupy Huntington today. Occupy Huntington. That's Huntington, West Virginia, not Huntington Beach, California. Huntington, West Virginia, a little town of, what, maybe 30, 40,000 people? It is home to Marshall University, not exactly a liberal bastion of higher education. Hardly a bastion of higher education at all. Remember, it was... The bank executive who endowed a chair in Ayn Rand studies at Marshall, and Marshall said, oh, we'll take that money, sure. But there's even an Occupy Huntington. We are Occupy Huntington, a nonviolent, anti-racist, anti-sexist, anti-homophobic, and anti-classist movement against the corporatization of America. They have begun their occupation as of 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time today. And they have a list of demands. And you know what? They are demands that you would not have any trouble getting on board with, I suspect, whatsoever. And so if time presents itself here a little bit later in the program, I'm going to read Occupy Huntington's list of demands because it's just plain cogent. For now, however, we're going to go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome back to the island of broadcasting.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you very kindly. I enjoyed my toast this afternoon like you can't imagine.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're getting back to the...
solid food. Oh, my God.
And culinary arts.
Yeah, toast.
Instead of magic, you're a disciple in the culinary of arts.
That's me. I've got a little scar on my forehead in the shape of a basting bulb.
Hmm. Well, there's definitely a lot of stuff happening with this Occupy Wall Street movement, but I think I'm in the Malloy camp. I've been listening to a bit of conservative radio. They're just waiting. They're waiting in the wings for the Democrats to get on board. And as soon as someone decides to reach out their hand and it's clearly visible, it's on, Bob, and we don't have the infrastructure to combat.
What do you mean by it's on?
I mean, that will be the story. That will be the main story on all the radio shows. It's like a passing thing. Like they say, oh, the Wall Street protesters. And it's really casual the way they're taking it right now. But when a Democrat announces, or when a member of the Democratic Party announces that they're tied to this movement in any way, it's going to get the whole right wing, I hate to say it, it's going to get the whole right wing mobilized in the way we
are. Well, they're mobilizing. I mean, they're gearing up even as we speak. You know, I mean, I don't see how you overlook, you know, these creeps at CNBC calling them Leninists, anti-American, anti-capitalist. You know, Herb Cain is out there prattling away, making an ass of himself, which isn't very hard. No, they're ramped up and ready to respond, but we certainly can't let that be the determining factor for whether or not we go forward. Dennis Kucinich hasn't hesitated to suggest that he is in support of it. And even Barack Obama yesterday made some statements, and yeah, the right wing jumped right out there. Oh, what's he doing? Oh, this is class warfare. You know, I saw a sign, I think it was over at BartCop, it's only class warfare when we fight back. Have you noticed?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's completely unfair, and I'm with you on that. But see, the biggest problem with it though is that once it's that, it's like it's in effect of like chumming the water in a bit. I mean, you haven't seen anything yet. When there is a clear indication of the Democratic Party is on board, whoever that may be who jumps into it. I don't know. I see things going in the wrong direction when it happens.
I'm not being argumentative for being argumentative's sake, David, but I'm having a hard time understanding just exactly what you mean by that.
What I mean is that I think that these kids, and I've talked to a few people in the movement and people associated with it, and they want to stay away from the political branding. And when you go in there, and there is no other word for it, Bob, but when you co-opt it and you put your own political message on it, that makes the kids and the protesters who have no political affiliation be turned off, because it's like, wait a minute, why are you all of a sudden here?
So they don't want the movement to grow?
No, they do want the movement to grow, but you see, I guess the problem is that, how to put it this way, a lot of kids just don't trust the political party system, and you're beginning to see signs of the fact of if more people jump on board in that. I'm just telling you, Bob, if more people jump on board in that way, it'll turn off a lot of people.
Oh, look, listen, I maintain no illusions whatsoever, David. If that long-ass black limousine that and the rest of the long-ass black limousines and the whole damned the procession is about a mile long carrying Barack Obama showed up at Zuccotti Park, those kids would be, and rightfully so, put off. I don't think he has any place there. If people start trying to speak for what this is, people will be put off. But as Robert Bourassage wrote in that in that essay that I read, he's not speaking for them. He was merely giving his impression of what he had observed thus far. You know, Paul Krugman has done the same thing, and I don't think people are, if anything, a consensus-based organization that is loosely based on democratic principles is not necessarily going to object to people making of it what they want it to be for them. That's the nature of such an amorphous organization.
I get what you're saying about that there needs to be some political influence and affiliation, but it's a...
Well, I mean, if it's not going to have a political effect, David?
Yeah.
How is it going to have any effect?
Well, that brings an interesting question.
Because the guys in the high rises in Wall Street and the assholes in Chicago with their "We Are the 1%" sign, they're not going to have a Road to Damascus moment when they, you know, when they see the crucified Christ in the air and suddenly realize how wrong they've been. That's not going to happen. It is only, and it is by virtue of the fact that it is a nonviolent movement, it is non-threatening. So it's not like they're carrying pitchforks and torches. There's as I understand it, and I run the profound risk of being a fogey in saying this.
Right.
But as I understand it, there's only one kind of pressure that can be brought. They're not using guns. They don't have tomahawks or bows and arrows. There is one kind of pressure, and that is political pressure.
Yeah, I understand that, Bob. But again, you're dealing with a lot of people who are youthful and college students, and there is that impression that if you have too much political faith in a movement, I don't think a lot of Democrats and progressives understand this yet. They don't fully understand it. If you have a lot of pressure into it, it's just going to be like, wait a minute, why are you here? I don't give a shit about your mascot. Get out. That's what's going to happen.
Well, so far it's proven very, very inclusive, and I would be surprised by conduct like that. I mean, I have some experience with these kinds or this kind of movement. And if it is hallmarked by anything, it is largely a determination to reach agreement, to reach consensus, to reach compromise. It is that democratic. And so I'd be surprised if there was a get the F out aspect to it for anyone except those who might, you know, be bringing the guns and bows and arrows.
Well, the way I look at it is it's early in the stages, and to me, what Malloy said about this being co-opted by any of the by the Democratic Party and by arms of the Democratic Party, it's I can see.
I don't think they could co-opt it if they wanted to. And perhaps some do want to, but I don't think they could.
I disagree with that. I mean, the media can twist things around in an instant.
Well, the media can say that it's been co-opted into a purple cow, but it doesn't mean it has.
But see, Bob, that's where you're wrong, because perception is...
I mean, everything. Jesus, you know, it was a week ago that I was tweeted at by some right-wing goober. Oh, this is all just the front group for George Soros and has got the fingerprints of the Tides Foundation all over it. I mean, Jesus, David, the right wing has been messaging on that crap for weeks.
I understand what you're saying, but it's a perception game that is everything. It doesn't matter what's true or not. That's where we're at right now, Bob. And here's the other thing. The other thing is this protest continues to go, and this is what a lot of people don't realize. As this protest continues to go, the media is going to speed up with the coverage, and they're going to speed up with the negative coverage, and they're going to make everyone like, all right, enough already. Let's get these kids back to college. And that's how you break up the movement.
You know, I don't necessarily know that they're all missing class.
I mean, okay, then let's have them get back to their families and homes and friends.
How about let's have them get back to work? Because you know what? If there are jobs for American people and a reasonable shot at the American dream for everybody, they will. Because that's part of it.
Well, I agree with you, but what I'm saying is that's the impression that's going to be tossed out there. Bob, I already see it happening. Listen. People are going to get sick of this, and they're going to—they don't have the impulse, they don't have the critical thinking skills to say, "Well, wait a minute, why are these people here?" They watch the TV and they go, "Damn it, why don't these kids go home?"
Yeah, and they said that in 1967, and 1968, and 1969, the kids didn't go home.
It's a different time than 1967, Bob. So the media is a wholly different animal. You know what I saw today, Bob? I saw that iTunes now has a Michael Jackson trial app.
Oh, yuck.
I guess what I'm saying is that as long as you control the perception, you control the game.
Sure. No one understands the idea that the media is the medium is the message and all of that the Marshall McLuhan stuff better than I. I get that.
Mm.
But what I'm saying, David, is that when the rains came down, there were a lot of people who had ponchos on that were donated by SEIU. And I say, good on SEIU. Now, on the other hand, if SEIU comes along and says, "Hey, I see you're wearing one of our ponchos. You need to sign up and join it." Yeah, no, they're not going to ask people without jobs to join unions.
Mm.
But by the same token, to talk about working people's rights is to talk about the same thing. I mean, what the hell good is having a job if you don't have any rights in the workplace? Now, by the same token, some of the fat cats with swimming pools in their yard, in their backyards, who are delivered by limousine to their Union International headquarters, those guys need to stay the hell away. Issue statements in support, but don't get down there and act like you're a working stiff too when you're making $400,000 a year. Don't do that.
The biggest problem, though, Bob, is the majority
I don't see the Democratic Party. I don't know what this co-opt really means, because you're ascribing organizational capabilities to the Democratic Party that the Democratic Party does not have. It's the Democratic Party. Now, if the Republicans had any interest in it, I'd be worried about co-opting. Look at the teabaggers.
But this is
the Democratic Party. We're not herding cats. We're wrangling butterflies.
I hear what you're saying, but here's the thing about that is that I don't think many political organizations want this protest to go on without their stamp in it. And if they can't control it, then they get in that situation where they get a little bit paranoid and start, "Well, we got to break it up."
No, I don't see it. I think that's an overreach, David. With all respect, and I honor your argument, I think you're overreaching.
I'm telling you, Bob, the signs are already out there. When I mean the signs, I mean the literal signs. They're bringing out the.
But isn't this the isn't
Bin Laden sign?
But you know what? Isn't this the same argument that the right wing was making with Tahrir Square? "Oh my God, the Muslim Brotherhood has taken it over." And I'm not being a dick to you or anything.
No, it isn't the same argument. I'll tell you why. Because there is a sense that we have in this world that we have a problem with control, and political organizations, for the most part, have become complete control freaks. Same with Move On. Same with everyone else like that. And they always have to have if they're not involved. Well, guess what? We don't like this, and we're not a part of this. And then, I'm not saying they bring the infiltrators from their organization, but they're already bringing people in, Bob.
Well, I've never.
I don't know where they're from. That's the point. I don't know where they're from. But listen,
where who are from?
They're there. The people who are holding up the signs already. You got the signs that Obama's the Antichrist, Obama Bin Laden, all of that. All of those signs are coming in on Wall Street. So if they're brought in by the right wing.
Well, you know what? I mean, now that much is very much true. The right wing has been busy. They have worked, they're working tirelessly, even as we speak, to try to rebrand and refocus the protest. The little libertarian free silver freaks out there, and the Paulistas, and, "Well, why are," I mean, you've seen the questions asked in the for-profit media. "Well, why aren't they protesting the Fed when the Fed is the problem, and what we need is silver currency?"
And they're trying to get, they're trying to herd the movement over to protesting at the Fed instead of protesting at the source of the problem, the private sector, the profit at all costs, Wall Street goons. I mean, that's very much real. That is in play. And if somebody's walking around with Obama equals Osama, the posters, well, you know what? I'm willing to bet. I mean, look.
LaRouche.
Paulistas. Because, see, there are already some Paulistas down there. They have been for a long time, if I understand correctly. But they're the ones who are going to do that kind of stuff. Even the people on our side, and we talk about it a lot here on this program, who are terribly, terribly dismayed with Barack Obama, would never walk around with an Osama is Obama, Obama is Osama, whatever sign. We're not going to do that. We just don't. I mean, I've been to a lot of these events, and I haven't seen that.
Right.
So when I see it happening, I know I got a pretty good sense of where it's coming from. I mean, I'm familiar with a lot of these organizations, for instance, that were present at the Take Back the American Dream conference, okay, that Jane Hamster says is trying to co-opt it, which is just, you know, it is. It's just unmitigated bullshit. And all of these organizations are nonviolent. All of these organizations are community-oriented. One of the biggest problems with the organizations is trying to get them to understand that, yes, there is an element to their work that is political, when they don't necessarily want to be that way. They're out there providing, you know, their mission is providing soup and a crust of bread every day. Their mission is trying to make sure that little children aren't rounded up and shipped out of the country and have an opportunity at an education. And when you're engaged in that kind of work, it seems a bit frivolous to wrap yourself up in politics. I've met these people. I know these people. And they're not gonna run. Oh no! We gotta own this movement. That's the very nature of progressive and liberal organizations. It's not that we want to try to get everything under one umbrella. Trying to get that unity argument across is the biggest challenge we face.
I hear what you're saying, Bob, but I think that's the impression they put out, and the perception they put out. But the reality is far from different. All of these organizations are fighting for their credibility.
Now, what they're fighting for is enough grant money to make the next fiscal year.
That too. But what I'm saying is that from what I've seen, and I went to the chat room a little bit and I talked to some of the protesters and stuff like that, is that political affiliation. I'm saying is if they press on it too hard, and you put up like a Democratic flag right next to one of their tents or something, people are going to be turned off by that.
Well, maybe they might. You know, who knows what people are going to be turned off by? You know what? If I was down there and somebody planted a flag, oh Jesus, pick a logo, Starbucks, right. I'd be put off by that. Okay. Andy just wrote in, David, and he says, "I really don't know where David's coming from. This is something you have to live. You have to be there. These kids are not privileged. Most of them are the salt of the earth muddling through life. They're not gifted, not of privilege. They just know life for them and their parents is not working. This is genuine, from the heart, and original. The kids know the system is rigged, and they're done playing the game on the terms of the plutocracy." And with that in mind, all I was saying about the fact that it has to have an element of it that is political in nature is that what I said earlier. No guns and bows and arrows and tomahawks, no pitchforks and torches. If you're just waiting there for hearts and minds to change, they'll be there till they're octogenarians. There is the only hope in a rigged system, and the system is most assuredly rigged, David.
Right.
Is political, and that is bringing pressure to bear. And that is changing, you know, changing the system. I mean, obviously, I haven't heard of Occupy Lincoln, Nebraska, or Occupy Omaha yet. Maybe there's a couple of liberals left in Nebraska. But look at the situation there. One of the biggest thorns in the side, one of the biggest reasons that the Democrats have a hard time getting anything done, is Ben Nelson, that guy with a ferret on his head. Okay? Now, he is ostensibly a Democrat, but he's about as much a Democrat as Joe Manchin or Mitch McConnell are, or Rand Paul. Now, this guy's going to run in November against a guy who is the Attorney General of Nebraska right now, who is a Republican, who makes Ben Nelson look like a liberal and will run against... Ben Nelson's a goddamn liberal. That's what they'll do. Okay?
Mm.
Now, why is that going to happen in November? Because no one is running a progressive against Ben Nelson. No one is talking. Nobody's on the stump. Nobody's on the hustings talking about liberal progressive ideas and the problems that working everyday Nebraskans face. That I know of. Now, if somebody sends me an email saying, you know, the Bill Smith is running against the Sally Smith is running against Ben Nelson and she's a liberal progressive, then good for her, and let's get her on the line and interview her and talk about what that means. But you cannot hide from the fact that it is a rigged bullshit system, but by the same token, it's the only system in play. They're operating according to beautiful rules of democracy and consensus, but it's not the rules that the rest of the country politically operates on. And I'm not trying to deliver a lecture or instructions or anything. No, they're the ones standing in the rain. That's for them to figure out. But down the road, I'm confident, David, that they're going to figure out that there has to be a political aspect to it.
I understand what you're saying, but I still think that there's lots of division. Many people and many organizations benefit from the division, Bob. And we are now at the point now, Bob, where a lot of people do not know the difference between Democrats and Republicans. They just know, well, I'm on the Democratic team. Well, I'm on the Republican team. And after a while, it's pointless.
Well, actually, if you're registered, I don't buy into that. If you're
you don't have to buy into it, Bob, but a lot of people are.
If you're a registered Democrat, generally, you've got a pretty good, with the exception of places like West Virginia, you've got a pretty good idea of what it's about. You know, the party here is moribund. That's my new word. Been using that a lot lately. But Republicans, oh, sure, you know, I'm a Tea Partier because I want to protect America and make sure Pearl Harbor's never attacked by the Germans ever again. Yeah, they're like that. They're that damn dumb.
But most people who are registered Republicans that I've met, they're not like the teabagger aspect. I just see a lot of people who...
But you're in Maine, and that's not surprising.
I understand that, but... I just see that they repeat the dogma and they repeat the talking points, but I don't really see the stereotype that people are saying that they're all teabaggers. And I think in an aspect of that, I just think a lot of people are
teabaggers are at best 20% of the electorate, and it's like something I said the other night. They're not a majority because the people who want the teabaggers in place don't have to have a majority. All they have to have, and this is an outflow from the Ken Burns documentary about Prohibition and that nasty, evil creep who I hope is still roasting on a spit in hell, Wayne B. Wheeler. He realized he was the father of all of this filth. And he realized he didn't have to have a majority. He merely had to have the margins. And so that's, no, every Republican is not a teabagger. But the teabaggers are the perceived heart and beating heart and soul of the Republican Party. Go watch video from this Voters Values Voters Summit, and you're going to see them in action because this is, you know, this is their red meat conference where they talk about the damned illegals and all them poor aborted babies that could be out there growing up and curing cancer and more of them illegals and, oh, Jesus, the gays and all of that crap.
Do you think the protesters will stay during the holidays?
Yes, I do. Where are they going to go?
Weather's a bitch, so that's why I'm.
But the thing is, I'm willing to bet that conversation is already taking place.
There's the strain of their family and friends. That's the other thing. See, what I'm saying, Bob, is sooner or later you have to go home.
Not when you ain't got no home to go to.
Well,
I mean, this is there is modeling here, David, and some of that modeling is on people stood in the freezing cold in some of the Baltic states to change their government. People stood in the blazing heat in Egypt and are being gunned down in Syria. And there's still a war cooking in Libya. And by comparison, that ain't much to weather some rain, some sleet, some cold, as long as everybody is taking care of themselves. And that's one of the most brilliant things about this whole thing, is that these people are taking care of themselves. They are taking care not only of themselves, that's the wrong way for me to put it, they are taking care of each other.
I'm with that, and I've contributed to the movement monetarily, and my only thing is that the fact that when you have I won't say that I know the percentage of people who are homeless there or don't have any home to go home to. I don't know that, but what I'm saying is that when it goes around the holiday season, and the fact that it's been going on for 2 or 3 months, that in a sense is the next litmus test, because a lot of people are going to be under that strain of, damn,
But David, every day is a litmus test.
Yeah, I understand that, but it's going to be even more of a burden when it comes to that time, because that's the way the holiday season creeps into your mind.
But if I have any understanding of the nature and determination of some of the folks that are involved, down in the Coal River Valley, we had young people 80 feet up in trees. We didn't have them there. We didn't, hey, go climb 80 feet. No, nobody said that. They decided they would do that. And stayed there for 3 weeks through snowstorms, David. 80 feet high in a tree with passive denial audio weapons being used on them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So don't undersell the determination.
I'm not underselling.
Because you know what? It will be a hell of an image when the really cold stuff does come, and they're still there. And you see photos of CEOs wrapped in cashmere scarves and cashmere coats. With kid skin gloves on their hands and Brooks Brothers shoes on their feet, and they're still shivering. I've got just a little bit more, and we know how careful I am about this word faith.
Yeah.
In what these people are, I hate saying these people, the protesters, the Occupy Wall Street. Democracy advocates are about.
Well, I think it all depends also on the media's interest, and this is one of those stories where the media can dump it any time they want to.
And see, there's going to at some point in time, and this will be a telling point. I don't think it's happened yet. Some I can be corrected if it has. But you know, when Anderson Cooper parachutes shirtless into the middle of Zuccotti Park,
right?
You'll know that it is in the middle of the consciousness. Now, will he do that? Can he break away from his privileged upbringing to pretend to give a damn, like he goes to places like the lower Ninth Ward and pretends to give a damn, or pretends to give a damn at the site of the Upper Big Branch disaster? I don't know. That might be a bridge too far. That might be too much of a rejection of his own class. But the nice thing is that people like Olbermann and Maddow. And yeah, Schultz, and O'Donnell, and God knows Rick Smith, me, Malloy, Hartman. We will continue to talk about this, and we will not let it go away. Now, the next question is, and it's a question of savvy and desire, is the extent to which that nexus can be reached, like what Susan was talking about with the two folks appearing on Olbermann's show, that we can be we can be effective in not merely talking about it, but letting the people doing it do the talking about it. And you know what? This audio stream is wide open to them. Any time that I'm on the air, it is a welcoming and hopeful place for the people who are occupying and out there who are out of their seats, on their feet, and in the streets to call and talk about why.
I'll pass it to them. And before I go, people should want to check out the Martin Scorsese, George Harrison, Living in the Material World documentary that's just started.
Oh, where?
On HBO.
Awesome.
So you want to check that out.
Cool. Will do. David, have a great weekend, brother.
All right, later.
All right, see ya. Bye now. David calling from Maine. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well.
Hey, Sandra.
Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world.
There is that.
That's that Margaret Mead quote. And the thing is that, I don't know how much, you know, the damage the media can do at this point. I mean, people aren't out there just because. This has been building for a while, and I've been wondering why it hasn't happened sooner. I don't really see this as a construct or some sort of conjured up type of thing. I mean, I was looking at the anonymous, you know, they have their ongoing stream, and I mean, there's loads of people there. There's just like a lot of people there, and I don't know. I'm really not sort of buying David's concerns. You know, it's just sort of, you know, this is sort of the kind of response that can only happen because everyone is so boxed in. I mean, we see people waited, and they see the political process. What do we have? We have a black man who is has a bag man in Tim Geithner for his campaign contributions, trying to pretend to speak some populist. So I don't buy what Obama's saying for 1 minute, Bob. Sorry, I just think whatever. I mean, one can be hopeful, but you have to look at what's being done because I'm seeing now we still have that super committee. So Obama and his people know good damn well that jobs bill ain't going to pass worth shit. And we're going to be left with these automatic cuts to the rest of the safety net. Don't forget about that. That's still...
Oh, no, that's in the back of my mind, and I have... Utterly, you know, this is the pessimism portion of the program, I guess. I have absolutely no confidence in the super Congress's ability, frankly, to decide what it's going to have for lunch, let alone how to go about screwing working and poor people some more.
Well, what I'm saying, though, and if they do go ahead and do that, once again, yeah, the only response is to use people in the streets. I mean, that is like what we're getting to, because there is no other response, because the ballot box didn't work. I would say that 2008 was people giving it a good try, and we see what we got. Now, I'm not really blaming Obama per se. I do think that it seems to be a function of the system, and he's going to try his best to get reelected, and chances are he may. But what is he representing, though? You know, I mean, I find the second term pretty damn frightening because he's representing the oligarchs. He's a coin operated politician. Sorry.
Well, I don't take issue with anything you've said, Sandra, because there's reason to be more than nervous.
By the same token,
there's a reason he used that measured language. Well, it's a manifestation of the frustration of yada, 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 everybody go to sleep. You know, if you're really behind it, you say, yeah, good on him, and the rest of you, where the hell are you?
Yeah, well, no, I just think that he, you know, has to make some sort of commentary, but the problem is that as things get worse, that is going to be the only response for people. You see what I'm saying? So when David talks about, oh, it's just going to be sort of marginalized by the media, yeah, so what? The people aren't going to go away. The poverty and the joblessness and the student debt, all that is getting worse. And if you don't respond to it through normal political channels, you're going to do what you've done over the centuries.
Right, and I think, Sandra, we have to also bear in mind that this is, and maybe this is a function of the jadedness that some of us have fallen into. This is not a creation for, this is not something that was created for the media. Granted, we have a political system in this country in which everything that happens, and we have been trained to look at it that way, everything is done specifically for the purpose of creating a media impression. This is not, and as such, it is shocking. And if the media go away, and if they stop looking and they quit paying attention, that's more of an indictment on them than it is a reflection on the success or failure of the movement.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that the movement is going to go away. I mean, when the civil rights movement was going on, there wasn't that many people actually doing stuff. People don't remember. But if you read history, you know that the civil rights movement had a core group, and, you know, it took a long decade to build, and you have the same dynamic where the majority of people are just sort of sitting back. I mean, isn't that always the case? So I think the media can, people perceiving the media's power is somewhat distorting. I mean, the bigger problem is that our system is so, the political system is so broken that there isn't any sort of solvable path for what's going on now. See, that's my concern. I mean, as a person who started out, you know, reading Rousseau and reading hardcore political thought, shifting to someone who sort of, I self-educated myself with economics, it's occurred to me now that, damn, you know, that's like the key, the whole economic issue at this point in America. And that situation is almost insolvable with the system we have in place. So that's my worry. My worry is that the path that needs to rectify this is not there, because the system is so.
And that's the open question that I was talking about with David. That's why I was talking about, you know, whether there is or will be, or should be a political aspect to that. All the paths, you're right, all the paths do seem foreclosed. But if any can be sort of battered down, it's the political one. I mean, can we go that far?
Oh, yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying that's like the only, I mean, that's sort of the only option. You know what I mean? I it's hard for me to explain I was just listening to what David was saying, and I'm thinking, yeah, and what's the alternative? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, is it just, you know, if he thinks that, oh, because the right wing is going to yell and make a show of their, you know, use all the power they have in their medium to sort of ridicule people to the point where they do what? I guess I'll go starve now. Oh, I guess I'll start paying my student loans even though I will not try to have a decent life. I'm sorry. I just don't see it. I don't see people just sort of saying, well, fuck it, I'll just roll over now. You know?
Yeah.
We're in the world to stop that.
You know, perhaps instead, Sandra, of, and I'm guilty of it, of trying to model this on the civil rights struggle or the anti-war struggles of the 60s, maybe we're missing the point. And maybe that's because of, you know, the age demographic in which you and I exist and others. Maybe if I had my daddy or my mama around to ask, you know, they'd be up in their 80s.
Depression mentality?
You know, I think Dad would look at me and say, what the hell are you talking about? That ain't none of that. That's Hooverville.
Yeah. Well, yeah, which brings us to, you know, the lack of choices, which may be propelling people to this situation. I mean, I don't know. I don't, you know, the whole idea they're just going to sort of, oh, well, we give up. I mean, I don't really know. I suppose that could happen, but the sort of system is still annihilating the middle class, and that process isn't going to stop. So there has to be some sort of response. And the only reason why I refer to the civil rights movement per se is just the fact that we're not, you know, you can have like sort of a small percentage of the sort of dispossessed people responding to get a response.
Yeah, and that was not a criticism on my part, Sandra.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it was, but I mean, I think you make a better point with the Hooverville, because...
Well, and let's take it one step further.
The desperation aspect of it.
The thing that does scare me, and David didn't go directly here, and even if it is a potential reality out there, it can't be a reason to do or not to do. The thing that's disturbing, also from that same era, is remember the Bonus Army?
Oh, yeah, and you remember the response of the state?
Yeah.
Right, when we have the potential for that, and, you know, that's why that story of the J.P. Morgan thing is disturbing, especially since I found out that that was money that was given to them, you know, last year. So, you know, we seem to have... the police bought, just like the politicians, you know, and it's just sort of like, yikes. So I do worry about, you know, what the end game will be for the state response to the crowd. That to me is more of a worry than the media contorting it, you know?
And frankly, the fact that CNBC and these other conservative outlets feel compelled to laugh right now, that speaks in abundance to me. When you've got to get Donald Trump and that thing on his head out there to talk about how poorly they're dressed, that means that it's under your skin. You know, it's
right.
It's like an argument on the internet where you're getting your ass hammered, and you come back and say, yeah, but you misspelled dispossessed,
right.
Moran. That's where these right wing for profit media outlets are. They're down to they dare not, you know, even because see that demographic that Fox News serves. They're up in their 60s and their 70s and their 80s, and they can tell you about Hooverville, and they can tell you about the Bonus Army.
Well,
and
I
so
mean,
you dare not address the concrete complaints that these heroes in these movements have. You can do is laugh at them.
Well, no, and also when I read about, you know, that the police in their riot gear, you know, has smashed up the Occupy San Francisco. And I forget where else, where the police is getting hard. I mean, that to me is what the concern is. I think the protesters are going to be a lot more concerned about the state than what the media is saying. You see what I mean? We're beyond that to me. I think those people have made an impression now that the state is going to have to get a little bit more involved, especially since it's sort of spreading. But my question is, well, why is it spreading? It's because of the condition of our economy. I you know, it's pretty hollowed out. I don't know.
And you're very astute on this, Sandra. It's hard to tear yourself away from all of this, but if you do for a minute or two, what you're going to find is that there's a wider world out there where there's a big ball of coming right downhill. I mean, the housing bubble took us down the first time, but the European debt crisis may be the second blow at the ankles.
Well, no, especially since the way they're managing it in Europe, because you know, they don't address one of the sort of core problems is the capital flow, the capital flows in and out of these different countries. You know, also contribute mightily to the whole European project. So all they're concerned about is making the bondholders whole and the hell with everybody else. So that's not going to work. So I don't, and they're talking about some meeting in November. I think they need to do something sooner than that.
But if Europe takes an ass beating, that's gonna roll downhill to the boys on Wall Street, isn't it?
Well, that's what they're big, you know, of course, that's why you have Obama talking about, you're scarring the planet, you know. Anytime Obama opens his mouth about some sort of financial crisis, you can bet that, you know, his paymasters are who he's speaking for. I'm sorry, and, you know, I know I'm, like, quite cynical and down on Obama, but I'm really, you know, I want to buy it, but I'm not buying it with him because he got Geithner still there, and the way he got rid of Elizabeth Warren. And speaking of her, damn, did you hear what she said?
perhaps not the latest?
Well, when she said, made that crack about Scott Brown.
Yeah, she kept her clothes on.
Shut the hell up. Oh, and then he had to go stupid, like, oh, well, thank God for that. You know what I'm saying? But he's an idiot, and the thing I like about her is that, damn, don't mess. Obviously, she's pretty damn tough.
And, you know, the funny thing, he betrayed his ignorance again. And, well, I didn't go to Harvard.
I went to the school.
She didn't go to Harvard either.
She went to the University of Texas or some public school, and then she went to law school at Rutgers. That's another public school. So, yeah, no, he's an idiot. And the thing about it, though, is, like, if she had taken her clothes off, she would deem unfit for office.
Oh, exactly, exactly. Yeah.
So that's another thing about it. It's like, you know, these Republicans are disgusting because they can do anything, absolutely anything, and it's okay. But if someone black or a woman, oh, my God, they're not fit. So, yeah, you know, he's a pig, and I appreciate her making that crack on him.
And I have a feeling that that little salvo might have rattled Scott Brown a little bit, because he is not up. He is up against his wit and intellectual better.
Oh no, and not only that, but I mean, the only thing he has going on his side is, you know, all the money he's getting from Wall Street. You know, of course they're funneling big time for him because they don't want to have nothing to do with Elizabeth Warren. I mean, mind you, I'm mixed about it. I'm like, really, what is she going to do in the Senate? You know, to be honest.
Well, the Senate is a dead thing.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying this. I want her to be in serving, you know, public service. But yeah. Anyway.
Well, I mean, that's but you know, there is a point to her candidacy, because if she unseats him, that's one less Republican seat.
Yeah. Well, no.
The Senate, for all the time that we spend talking about presidential politics, the Senate is very much in play.
Oh no! It's really in play. I mean, it must be if Reed is asserting himself by forcing them, you know, changing rules. That almost knocked me back when I read that he actually asserted himself in a leadership manner. But anyway, listen, I won't keep you too much longer. I just wanted to mention that kill list business.
That thing just bothers the hell out of me. I read it earlier. You sent it along. Headline: Secret Panel Can Put Americans on Kill List. And
it's
just
Reuters. Let's get that out.
Yeah, it's Reuters. Reuters. I mean, this is But it's. I mean, I can't. Again, I mentioned my dad and my mom a little bit ago. Those FDR Democrats, those children of the Depression, God or whatever rest their souls. If I had my dad in his 80s, and I said, "Hey, Dad, look at this headline," he would fall into sort of spontaneous Tourette's. Secret panel can put Americans on kill list. I mean, the idea that there is, and it's not even upper echelon people. These are little lower level functionary bureaucrats who decide which American citizens need killed and which don't. Then they pass it upstairs to the National Security Council, which
to give the president so-called cover. It's so disgusting. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
But again, you and I and the rest of the Horn family, we're students of history, and we actually know what's in the Constitution. How is this panel that can declare we're going to kill, and it's not, you know, the what's that thing, one of those aphorisms they teach in the first couple of days of law school, hard cases make bad law.
Mm.
And this is one of those things. You know, it's hard to get worked up, unless you're, you know, us, about just going off and dusting off a couple of, you know, Alaki and his pal. You know, because, well, you know, they were bad actors. They, you know, and I've seen the argument made, well, you know, they constructively renounced their citizenship. Well, there ain't no such thing.
Oh, no, listen. The basic idea, though, that the executive branch is able to just go and assassinate an American without any due process, just itself.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. We know what's in the Constitution, and it is very, very clear in the Constitution that they, I mean, it's the Constitution's a framework, as you and I both know, but there were two or three things that they specifically put in the Constitution to make sure that it, by God, wouldn't be changed. And one of those is, there shall be no convictions, there shall be no ex post facto laws. And the other thing, which is big in this particular instance, is that there shall be no bill of attainder.
Yeah.
Now, what the hell is a list of people who can be shot on sight who are Americans, who have not been charged, who have not been tried, who have not been convicted, or indicted, or arraigned, or any of those other things that we recognize within the legal process? What the hell is that except a bill of attainder?
No, I mean, it's, no, and the thing is, though, but, you know, what is going on, which gets back to the whole system being broken and a bit of a joke now, when there's no response and there's no congressional action, no movement in other branches of our government, no questions, nothing. Except for this article. And I'm like, excuse me, you know, sort of, is anyone fucking...
Hello? Yeah, right.
So what's happening? Well, I'm sitting here waiting. I sent this to a friend of mine. They were like, hello? You know, like me, waiting for the sort of response, i.e., you can't do that because there is no, you know, it's unconstitutional, and there's no framework for what he's talking about. Yet this man and another man, they're dead.
And, you know, there are philosophic underpinnings, and by saying philosophic, I don't want to diminish anything, but this is not a mark of a... this is not proof of American strength. This is proof of American weakness.
Well, this is like...
If this man was as evil as they say he was, and he's an American citizen, go get his ass, bring him back, stick him in a jail, indict him. I mean, you know, come on, a federal prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. Indict him, try him. If he's convicted, deal with it. I mean, because if the evidence is strong enough to kill a man, surely to God the evidence is strong enough to convict him.
Well, it's like, to me, it's just sort of like, you know, Fred Hampton International. I mean, I can't really, you know, I don't know what else to compare it to except for just taking out someone because they spoke out against the government. You know, I mean, there's nothing else to it because this man didn't, he's not been charged with nothing. So he was murdered. And if Ron Paul and I think Dennis Q. Senate, a few people have said, you know, it's kind of high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, Ron Paul suggested impeachment. I think Kucinich just mentioned that it was, you know, high crime and misdemeanor. But I'm just sort of like, but have you noticed that there's nothing? There's no movement. There's no questions. There's not even a discussion.
Oh, when the news first broke, I was watching Twitter, and the vast army of Obama apologists jumped out so fast and said, well, you know, he's a bad man. Of course, he was at war with America. Of course we can kill him. And it all just dried up after that.
Yeah, no, nothing. That's the thing. It's just bizarre. But, like I said, I just, you know, that's what goes
and,
on.
And for clarity's sake, Awlaki was not a naturalized citizen. He was,
no,
he was born one, right?
He was born in New Mexico in 1973 or 71. Born in New Mexico, went to Colorado State. Spent some time in Yemen when he was young, came back, you know what I'm saying, American. An American who went to different countries, oh my God, you know, that's always suspect. As I found out when I came back after being away for 4 years, the first question they asked me was, do I have a job?
Huh?
Right. My black ass, I'm looking around thinking, oh, welcome home. Shit, that's what I said, and just sort of walked on. But that was back in those days when you could just say fuck you to these people, right? Can't do that anymore.
No, not without getting the orange jumpsuit and the shower shoes.
But anyway, beyond that, well, I'm just saying, you know, you're suspect if you have a passport, I guess, at this point. And this poor, I don't want to say this poor man. I don't know that much about him except for at one point he was at a meeting in the Pentagon after 9/11, as a moderate Muslim that they reached out to, and now today he's dead. So, you know,
word to the wise.
Well, and it's also
that's the other thing, Sandra, is with regard to him, the guy has a body of work. Okay, I mean he's got things that he said, and yet nobody with regard to the for-profit media has put anything out there except for paraphrases that, well, you know, he said to kill Americans. He said he wanted to go back and kill a bunch of Americans. Well, therefore, he deserved to die.
Well, I mean, but the thing is that can be applied, you know, Ruby Ridge, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous that people can't see the problems with this.
And yet there's constitutional law out there that actually says that American citizens operating under the operation of the First Amendment actually have the right to advocate violence.
Well, yeah,
it's one of those Klan cases.
Right. No, it's incredible. I mean, the Supreme Court has been pretty clear up to this point about it. So I just...
White folks advocating violence.
No, I understand it. I mean, so we're down to that. But the Star Chamber... thing. It has to be stated that's what's going on.
And, you know, that's one of those things that just turns my head. I mean, you know, we're talking about a president who was educated at Occidental, Columbia, and Harvard, who spent time as a constitutional law professor. You know, he wasn't a professor of negotiable instruments, okay? He was a constitutional law professor at the University of Chicago, and the instantaneous parallel that comes up for Sandra and comes up for Bob and the rest of us, oh, look, Star Chamber. And you're telling me that he's not sitting there going, guys, isn't this a little like Star Chamber? Oh, what's that? Is that one of those new talent shows, sir?
I just think the whole thing is just really disturbing and... I don't know.
To the apologist for whom Barack Obama can do anything and no objection, Your Honor, all I got to say is, what are you going to say when that power is in the hands of a Rick Perry or a Herb Cain? How will it be then?
Oh, God.
Because you know what? All of a sudden, them Obama apologists might be on the damn list. I mean, do we have any doubts whatsoever that if 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue right now was occupied by either Rick Perry or Herb Cain or even Willard Romney, that federal forces would be in Freedom Square in D.C.?
Drone strikes, you know, the whole nine yards. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know, and I don't, you know, I won't go on about it anymore because it's just mind-boggling to me. I'm very disturbed by it, and I'm more disturbed that there's no response or even questions about what the hell is going on. They're more concerned about that narco state business in Mexico. You know, with the guns, that whole...
Oh, yeah. I know you said you don't want to go on about it, but there are questions that surround this, Sandra. And another one, you know, Chuck Todd, David M.C. Rove Gregory, any of those vastly talented, vastly paid for-profit media types, any of them can, I mean, it, you know, give me the microphone to the little IFB in their ears just for the next press conference. Sir, can you tell us if you know what Star Chamber is or was?
You know... Well, listen. On a good note, I was really happy to see who got the Nobel Peace Prize. I guess they're trying to make up for the sort of Obama thing. They're probably reeling from that one. So
yeah.
They gave it to Ellen Sharif of
Liberia,
and I think one woman from Yemen and another woman from Liberia. I think. But
was it Liberia or Syria? I wasn't sure.
No, Yemen. And then the other two women are from Liberia. I mean, the one woman is the president right now. So
right.
Anyway, it was really surprising and quite gratifying. I was glad to see it.
As was I, because
those brought it back to what the prize
is supposed to be.
Doing. Yeah.
I mean, come on. Let's Aung San Suu Kyi, Barack Obama. You know.
Come on, who, really?
Yeah. Or that woman from Ireland. She's another one.
Right.
Why, yeah. Yeah, anyway, so I just thought that was, I don't know, you know, I got to start looking for some, you know, some light in all this darkness.
Well, that's that is that. And of course, we've got a little weekend coming at us, but so
yeah. And listen, I'll be happy to eat my hat too about the whole media thing and this protest. But I'm like, you know, I'm not really buying that one yet.
No, and there's another thing to bear in mind here. For instance, last night on the program, I ran Malloy's remarks from the beginning of the October 2011 rally at Freedom Square. You know what? I didn't find that on CBS, and I didn't find it on any of the other Alphabet Soup for-profit media networks. I found that on Ustream, okay? Lottie in the chat room sent me the link to Ustream. So while we sit here hand-wringing about what the for-profit media will or will not do, you know, we're not done, Sandra, developing, and I don't mean me, but largely, we are not done.
My battery's going dead. I'm sorry.
Okay, all right, see ya. I'll finish. Bye. We're not done determining or developing what the media that we make will be. You know, this little radio show that people have been tuning into for, nearly 8 years now, is an exercise in that. And, yeah, we could take it to video if I was so. Maybe we will someday if I ever get to expand the studio. But the video was there, and the video has been there, and the video is live. And nobody there is relying on the for-profit media to get the message out. It's going up to a server, and from the server it's going down to laptops and desktops and going down to phones, for Christ's sakes. So don't worry about Chuck Todd or Jim Cramer. Or Lawrence Kudlow, those pieces of offal trundling about on two legs. This just rolling in from Andy out in California. He says, important news concerning the occupation tonight, Occupy Sacramento being harassed. It has been announced by the police department in Sacramento today that the permanent ban that was charged on our occupiers last night was a mistake. They've also issued notice that they will allow the protest tonight to go on until 12 midnight. Afterwards, however, arrests may ensue. We need as much support from all of you as we can possibly have. Bring yourself and all your friends and help us instill the changes that we all desire. This is Sacramento. We do not encourage the variety of civil disobedience that could get you arrested. However, if that is something you choose, we will be holding a legal rights seminar to inform you of your civil liberties and how to deal with the police. If you cannot make it, then please watch and share our live streams and keep us in your hearts and minds. Thanks to everyone who has come, supported, and or donated to us. You are all amazing and helping to shape history. With love and solidarity, Occupy Sacramento. Andy also noting, to David's points about the holidays and duration of the occupation, people are coming and going. Some occupiers have part-time jobs. Some have parents or friends nearby. And some do have apartments nearby. There's a support network. People are bringing food, clothing, donating money, camping supplies, and medical accoutrement. Last night I chatted with a pizza owner, Victor, who brought over two hot occupies for the occupiers. Hot veggie pizzas. It's exhilarating observing the camaraderie among the people. The occupiers are organic and the local community is supporting them. People are dropping in from all over the West to join in, staying a few days and then moving on. Others, locals, are dedicated to seeing this through. To some, this is a war against the establishment, and they are determined to win. The police opened the first salvo by stealing the occupiers' belongings on Thursday morning. To many of them, that was a declaration of war. It has just made them more resolute, and the community is rallying around them. And you can follow at OccupySF.com. Andy says, Obama is BS. He doesn't even factor into the equation, nor does the Democratic Party. It's the total system that's broken. The Democratic Party is part and parcel of the problem, not the solution. It is as it presently stands, and it will remain so until people change it. It ain't going away. So, onward now, next in line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm well. I'm well. So, as this fellow horn participants and to the universe beyond, if the Tea Party is the heart of the Republican Party, whatever that mindset is, that conservative mindset, then Occupy Wall Street is the heart of the so-called Liberal Party. And the only thing we really have that's a party that would be a body, it might not be the body we want. It might be a little soft in the midsection. It might be going a little bare up on top, and you know,
a little clay footed.
Yeah, a little couple eight spots here and there on the hands. You know what I mean? And but this is what we got, and this is the heart of that body. This is the liberal heart. This is it. The Democrats have no choice. This is their heart. If they don't take it, they will lose. If they take it and follow it, we won't have to worry about no star chambers. Star chambers, that was what was going on in the Bush administration. That's where that comes from. I mean, I'm not trying to apologize for not president, not sure, but goodness gracious, there's so much crap. I mean, he's probably got a 3-foot stack on his freaking desk every day. You know, he's probably a little overwhelmed with some stuff. And, you know, maybe that's coming out there just so we say, hey. And then we get down to the root of it, and we can stop it where it starts. You know, about Awalaki, you know, well, you know, not for nothing. You know, and I'm not trying to say that people need to be on don't death. Come on now. But we all know where that started. We all know that it's been going on forever. That's what powers do. They've always done it. It's nothing new. The thing that's new is now it's all in your face. Now when you sit there and you hear about it or so on and so forth and you point it out, they don't look at you like you're saying, you know, there was that guy in the grassy knoll over there. You know, these are things that we just know they do things like that. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to think that government power kills people and has been doing it forever. And now it's in our face. And you know what? You know that the police will shoot down people you'll never know their name. What happened to Amadou Diallo? There was 41 bullets into that man, and all he had was his wallet in his hand. Oh, he looked like somebody. Man, they've been doing that. They get away with it, don't they? They always will, and they always have. Well, it's up to the heart to get back into the body. We get that heart into the body, we'll have jobs. We know how to fix this. We know how to fix this nonsense. We know what we need to do. I mean, I think we talk about it every time I talk to you. We need solar panels on every roof, period. Think how many jobs that is. Think about that. Think about how much that's going to free up. You are right? Am I...
No, you're not. 80,000 coal mining jobs out there, 2.8 million green energy jobs. You figure out which one's doing the growing.
We have technology on our side. We have everything on our side. We're about to win. Because if they do start violent acts, as, you know, some of the fears that were raised today by other participants in the horn, if they do start violent acts, well, what is that? I guess they're not ignoring us. I guess they're not making fun of and scoffing at us. And look, oh, they're fighting back at us. And guess what? Now we win. You know, it may not be the massive sweeping change that gets it started, but it chips away little by little by little by little until we start making steps out of these granite monoliths that we have to deal with. That's just how we get progress, step by step. You know, I mean, just like we talked yesterday in the Ken Burns prohibition, if it wasn't for them going in for, you know, we got prohibition out of it, but we also got the right for women to vote. We got all kinds of other ways of organizing. We got so many other tools that we needed from hitting on that monolith to the point, yeah, all right, the alcohol, but we realized that was the mistake, but this is the right way to go. We're going to take away the woman's right to vote? Of course not. Of course not. That's ridiculous. You know, these people that are occupying all these places, all over, it's just spontaneous. That, you know, you and I, we didn't get the card, but if we're going to be sitting on the cutting edge when the debris start flowing by, we almost need to start sending the impulse to grab that. We need that. Put that in the body, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
We're trying to listen. You know, that's what we need. We need that heart, that right there. Grab it, grab it, grab it. Start telling yourself that. Start telling your fellow liberals that. That's what we need. We need to embody that. And who doesn't support that? We know who doesn't support that. And who does support that? Well, we know who supports that. Everybody who knows anything about anything supports that. That's every working man right there in the streets supporting that. That is the same, that's the bonus check army. That's what that is still to this day. We haven't won. They didn't win. But we got a little bit out of that. Yeah, they used the cavalry on those people. But they do that again, and guess what? We'll win. We will always win. I'm not saying that there won't be pain, there won't be blood, there won't be tears, there won't be broken eggs and Humpty Dumpties and all that other stuff. But we will win. The pulse will continue. It's not going to stop. It's just going to continue. And if we put it into the body, we might get some traction out of it, you know? Ralph Nader, there is no third party in this election, so this is what we have to do. We hopefully, maybe this heart will change the Tin Man. Obama.
And you know what, Albert, I'm looking at an email here that just rolled in from our buddy David in South Carolina. When Occupy rallies are springing up in Florence, South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, Charlotte and Greenville, you know what? When those are springing up there, you know that, and this is no disrespect to anyone anywhere else, but when they're springing up there, when I hear about Occupy Birmingham, Alabama, when I hear about Occupy Jackson, Mississippi, then, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't worry about the Paulites. There's one guy standing there, the freaking Fed. Still with the Fed. You know, of course they're
free
gonna,
silver.
Of course, yeah, free. Yeah, come on. You know, people always they're always going to be there.
And free trigger too. You know, I'm sorry that was.
Well, they're going to be agent provocateurs. You know, and you know, it's a little stain, and that's just how it is. That you know, the clothes. There's some stains that are never going to come out. Period. It's just not happening, and they're one of them. So you know, it's just that's the tunic we have to wear. And you know that they don't dictate. The stains don't tell you where you're going. They're not. That's the wake. Don't listen to them. Don't worry about them. You know, all you got to do anytime you run into a Ron Paul supporter, you just say Ron Paul is a broken clock. He's right twice a day. and they go, well, yeah. You know, because you can. I mean, how easy is the easiest guy to just dismantle?
But you can buy a gallon of gas for a silver dime.
Yeah, okay, that's nice. But yeah, I know he wants to legalize and then the drug war. Oh, that's beautiful. But he doesn't believe in evolution. Huh? Yeah, you didn't know that.
No, and he doesn't believe in a woman has the right to control her own insides. How about that?
He thinks the world's 6,000 years old. How does that make you feel? Jeez, he's a dumbass. Everyone knows that. I mean, come on. You know, so he, and that's the thing, you know, it's the same thing with Ayn Rand. Yeah, 14-year-olds don't know squat. And you make sure you tell every 14-year-old, you know, hey, one day you can know things, but one of the best things you need to know right now is you don't know shit.
Well, you just reach over and you take the Atlas Shrugged out of their hands and just hand them, oh, I don't know, Locke, Rousseau, Montesquieu. You know, let's start back here and work up to her. How's that, okay? Can we do that? You know,
just go back to Seuss.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, give him sneeches and stars and they'll be fine. I don't see nothing getting co-opted. You can't co-opt this. This is, you know... This is hip hop.
I don't see it being co-opted either because whoever the co-opters are the sieve, and the occupiers are water. You cannot gather water with a sieve.
No. Who's gonna? I mean, yeah, they're gonna use Starbucks. Sure, they're gonna use them. Their bathroom. That doesn't mean that's gonna influence them. I mean, maybe a Starbucks has given out hand jobs.
No, I'm going to wet myself because I refuse to use the evil, manipulative, corporate restroom.
And I understand, and I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to want to be like that. But you know what? Wally World, man, you ain't going to find 91% alcohol anywhere. Not for a buck, something. You're just not going to find it. So get that there. You know, you don't have to buy everything there, but... get the things that are handy to go. Oh, that's a good buy. Buy that. That's fine. What's wrong with that? Nothing. couple.
Well, you know, Albert, I'm glad you brought that up. I've got a perfect case in point along those lines, and this fits perfectly. Over at the New Yorker, there's an article by Jane Mayer in this issue, and it's called "State for Sale." It's subheaded, "A conservative multimillionaire has taken control in North Carolina of one of 2012's top battlegrounds." It's about a guy named Art Pope. Now, this guy has enough money to burn a herd of soaking wet elephants, okay? All right. Now, this guy, his family has made its fortune. And this is one of the, and what I mean by I'm glad you brought it up, is this is one of those cautionary tales about corporate America versus non-corporate America. Now, this jackass, this evil, evil man, managed to almost single-handedly turn around the North Carolina state legislature. The entire legislature had not been controlled by Republicans literally since Reconstruction, okay? Well, it is now, and it is because this guy bought offices. And he did it real sleazy-like, you know, he's kind of like a little North Carolina Coke brother, all right?
I picture Jackie Gleason from The Toy.
Yeah, there you go. That works. But the point here is that the guy's money comes from the fact that he runs a big chain of basically little junk stores, kind of like Dollar General.
Mm-hmm.
Only they are a closely held, family-owned operation. It ain't traded on the stock exchange. All right? He has literally made a fortune selling crap to poor people, and he then used that fortune to turn around and buy the entire state government of North Carolina so he could in turn screw the poor people who made him rich. Now, he's not a corporation, as we understand them. Okay? I mean, that's a family-owned business since 1902 or what the hell ever. Okay?
He's a nice little monolith.
Yeah, he's just a small businessman. That's what he is, Art Pope. But you know what? Agnes kind of had to teach me to do this because no one would ever believe this, but I have a past as a snob.
Mm.
And she'd say, honey, I'm going over to Dollar General to buy detergent. And I'm like, oh, no, not Dollar General. And
I do that today.
And she said, you know, you dumbass.
Not like that.
The detergent that I buy is 50 cents cheaper at Dollar General than it is at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, honey, good idea. And so, you know, I learned, you know, that's part of
it. Get just that, though. That, you know, get the, that was.
Right.
Just the rubbing up.
So, you know, Dollar General is just corporate as hell, right?
Mm-hmm. Well.
I mean, they are. I mean, they're everywhere. They're a giant corporation. They put mom and pops out of business. All that shit that we hate about corporations.
Yep.
But look at the mom and pops. Look at Pope. You know what I'm saying? I mean, do you see where I'm going?
Yeah.
Do you see why my mind went there when you were talking about, yeah, okay, buy the rubbing alcohol at Walmart?
Yeah.
I get that. You know, I've got a little, there's a little family-owned hardware store not too far down the road from me here.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been there since God was a baby, okay? I mean, really. They've been there forever. I mean, the place was started by the guy's, like, grandfather or great-grandfather. And they're nice enough people.
Mm-hmm.
But I walk in the door to buy a bag of screws, and dude is wearing a Massey Energy ball cap.
Mm.
Now, what am I doing? What's doing me more harm right where I live? Buying the bag of screws from the guy who obviously supports Massey Energy? Or going across the river to Lowe's, great big corporate competitor, gobbler of all things good, and buying a box of screws there. Because, see, I'm not Thomas Jefferson at Monticello, Albert. I don't have a nailery in the back 40. I can't machine my own screws. So, I mean, I'm not yelling at you, and you know that. I mean, this, I'm just a little bit wrought.
Yeah.
But, you know, honest to Jesus, there are sometimes things are not as simple as we might like for them to be.
Well, and that is true. There's not a black and white world. You know, and while, you know, I'm sure Lowe's with their giant megastores, you know, that's a lot of room for solar panels on that roof. You know, yeah, they're a big thing. That doesn't mean they have to be bad. You know, that their behaviors can be dictated by, you know, by in a sense, by us. I mean, you know, even when you think about Walmart, right? Even Walmart, that big, hideous, nasty Walmart, like they wanna sell organic food. Now, yeah, they suck. Yeah, they suck. Yeah, they suck. But if they're getting into organic food like that, that's making organic food that more farmers are going to grow organic food. We all know.
And the price is going to come down.
The price is going to come down, then more people are going to have access to it. Now, as long as the standards are the standards that are the standards, stay the standards, then more people are going to have it. We all know that that's a more sustainable path. You know, not even in for 50 years. That's 100, 200, 2,000, 10,000 years. We're not going to be able to use petrochemicals for 10,000 years to grow our crops. We need to, and our bodies, I don't think we'd even last. Our genetic material would probably fall apart by then. If we don't have some nice, wholesome, natural food that's, you know, grown out of the friggin' soil that's alive. You know, until we start doing that, that's what the planet needs. We all know. The planet's screaming for that. We know that that's...
Yeah, I'm worried. I'm worried here, Albert. We're sounding terribly moderate.
Well, no. Hell no, we're not moderate. But this is the machine that we have to freaking throw ourselves to the gears on. So which gears are we going to throw ourselves on? We could throw... I'm not saying all about Walmart. Walmart, there's gears that we could throw that'll get them to work better with labor.
Yeah, but that's the reality with which we deal. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we talk a lot about Walmart. But, you know, walk into Target. Walk into Kmart. The same cheap Chinese, the you know, they got different tags on them, but they're still made in China by children chained to tables.
Yep.
So it's not like I'm going to Target because Target's ethical. Horse shit.
Yeah, no. A lot of that is us. That's us. That's our style. That's been our style. That's been the, you know, we bit. You know, into that, it's like I was watching, what was that River Monster show, and he's sitting there catching eels, but with no hook. He has to use some wool around some meat. And the fish's tooth is the hook. The fish is a predator. It wants that piece of meat, but the piece of meat's wrapped in wool. And so it bites in and starts spinning and doing its thing, and he pulls this thing out with nothing. It just pulls him out. Come here. Because the fish swims onto the shore, because it's going to chase that bait, and he's hooked anyway. And that's us. We're consumers. And we keep I need. Well, the more that we do that, the more that that's going to happen. What's going on over, you know, with China and labor and jobs moving over. That's why we need a whole new paradigm, a completely brand new paradigm. And that's what we're starting to.
Yeah,
see
go to your farmer's market if you've got a farmer's market to go to.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But you know, there's another side of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you live in Wisconsin. There's no is there a farmer's market in January? I mean, is anybody growing anything?
Yes. Absolutely. There's CSAs and everything. You can get vegetables the entire year from your local farmer. Farmers can grow. We grow spinach here in Wisconsin where it hits -40.
But you know what? The larger point that I was going to make is, and this is part of the locavore movement that's so big in the foodie circles, and it's got an element of elitism to it. But by the same token, you know what?
Yeah, but quick. That elitism is for quality food.
Yeah.
And once you go quality, you can't go back. I'm sorry. You just can't. And you want everyone else to experience that. No. This is a strawberry.
Right. And you know what? If it's January, you don't need
strawberries.
The Chilean grapes. I mean, I got nothing against the Chilean people, but let them eat their grapes in their season. We'll eat ours in ours.
If they have a little extra, and they take it by train, you know, they don't have to. It doesn't have to be a massive.
Right, thing. But when you're putting it, on a 747.
Yeah, well.
Or you know, a giant tramp steamer.
That's where they got to put the bees now. Is on the 747s.
Yeah, but yeah. It's like that executive with his from that onion piece, you know, with his Maine lobster boiled in 30 million year old glacial artesian water. Mm-hmm. You know, they're rich. Let the bastards go to Maine, you know, and get the lobster. That, you know, not only are they hyper consumptive, they're lazy.
Yeah, you're rich. You're super rich. Why don't you just get a beautiful, I don't know, car or some whatever you want to drive in, and or whatever. Get there. Go. You're rich. Go enjoy your life.
Get that 7 Series Beamer with the V12 or the Audi A8, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, go. Enjoy.
Yeah, go.
Relax. Life is good.
Yeah. Eat something. Get out of our sight. Stop making it. Stop trying to funnel everything into your mouth. You've got 5, you know, in-ground swimming pools full of money. You're done.
Yeah, I mean, look at it. I mean, just from you know, sort of small-scale economy. So he sits down in Manhattan and has his lobster boiled in $30 million-year-old glacial artesian water. Well, he's supported a restaurant in Manhattan and the lobster importer. On the other hand, he gets in his car and goes to Maine, and that money stays in the community.
Yeah.
But see again, that points to the fact that they don't give a damn about community. Because their community is them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we're here to serve them. You know, they own us. They want. That's why we've only been crying about their. You know, they want feudalism, and that's what this corporate feudalism we have. And like, there's so many things that we have to that are actually just coming to light. You know, that are sitting there, and people are really starting to wake up to. And now we're going to add these things up. This is a massive undertaking we have to deal with. We got a lot of cleaning to do. I'm in under no illusions. No one down in Wall Street protesting or anywhere else in this country are under any illusions. We know. We know where we are. We're screwed. And it's it. I mean, pretty much they're going to have to hit the reset button.
That's the other thing. At the same time that all of this is going on, you know, there's rioting in Greece. I've got a story here from News Ninja Gene that says there may be food riots in other less expected parts of the world in 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The reset, but nobody may have to. It may not be a matter, Albert, of people pushing someone having to push the reset button. The reset button may just get pushed.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense, if that distinction makes any sense.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that's what's happening, and we're going to push it. It's probably going to be like the last NIMSY. That's what I'm telling you, Bob. It's going to be like that. All of a sudden, it's going to be, you need anything? Okay, all right, talk to you later, bye. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be just a whoosh. It has to be. I don't see how any other way. That's the way it always is, and that's how it's going to be. It's going to be just a repeat of that. The thing is, we can't keep fear. We can't be fearful. Fear is the mind killer. I've repeated it over and over, always time, and words are easier to say than it is to control emotions. That is true, but fear is the mind killer. We can't give in to fear, because when we're alive during such revolutionary times, such as this, we don't have time to allow fear, because fear, that's when fear gets, that's why people are afraid of revolution, because when they're afraid, that's when the Hitlers come, and that's when these people come, and then we don't need that. We don't need that in terms of reactionary. But that's why we need to keep fear out of our heart. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That fear, that's when the bad people can start coming and really starting to twist us around. They've already made their mess. We know it's time to clean up. Don't be afraid. There's no other time to be alive other than right now. You know, we got people that have been before us that have gotten us up this far, and we need to continue to push for the people that come tomorrow. So there are people that can come tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, we have to make people proud of this place again. Proud of being, you know, whatever, a citizen of the entire world. And I think gradually, surely, it's thawing, and we're seeing it. Right? Right? Arab Spring.
Yeah.
Right? Progressive autumn. I mean, come on. You know, this is American autumn here. This is real. This isn't friggin' cocked, you know, free hot dogs and a bus ride to D.C., you know, a wheelchair accessible with the little power wheelchair. This ain't none of that shit. This is real. You know, they're right there, homeless there, and there's this there, but this is real. This is an organic movement. You know, Rosie O'Donnell goes down there. Rosie O'Donnell says, I don't know why anybody needs to make over $100 million. You know why she says that? Because she has over that. You don't think people that have that, I mean, if you had that kind of money, what would you be doing? Would you really care that much? Michael Moore, same guy. Same thing. Yeah, he's going to be putting money. Who do you think's feeding? Who do you think's going to give the blankets? I hope that they do. I hope they're walking the walk. I mean, I can't say that they are, but I would hope that they would, because I know if I had that kind of fund, and that was what, you know, remember Michael Moore, he said this is, and this is almost, he could probably, he's probably going to look at it like it's part of his responsibility, you know, for this whole thing to come to be, because it is. Capitalism, a love story. Right? He made that movie for a reason. And to me, in terms of watching all his work, yeah, he had a couple of weak ones here and there, and he did a couple of questioning things. But in terms of just straight up, boom, capitalism.
Also. Oh, it all goes all the, you know, his, yeah. So much of this does fall back to him, all the way back to the thing that put him on the map, Roger and Me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He, I mean, he's kind of been a, he's kind of been our pulse in a way. He's kind of been more, not even our pulse, like our little prodder. And he's right. You know, he just, you know, we got to give this master respect. Yeah, right, he did a little couple of things. Because, hey, you know, you always hear the same excuses from the same people. But he edited.
Well, but you know what? I'm glad you mentioned Michael Moore's name, because there's a classic example of the typical derision of the right wing, Albert. I will never forget, and I forget, I think it was Beck. You know, that little, the drug-addled freak.
Yeah, he's a crucifix to them. Just like those people in Wall Street are.
Yeah, with garlic.
Yeah.
And I think it was Glenn Beck who said, "Oh, Michael Moore." You just think he'd probably smell like hot dogs. You know what? It's kind of nasty, and you don't want to see him made. But you can live on hot dogs.
True.
Only somebody who has real disdain and no understanding whatsoever for the struggles of people who put, parents who put food on the table every night, whether it's beanie weenies or just the beans, would say something, oh, he probably looks like he smells like hot dogs.
Hey, I just said hot dogs. That's what the Koch brothers are giving out for the bus rides.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see how our minds work? Albert, it's been wonderful, man. Have yourself a great weekend.
Good, brother.
All right, take care. Bye now. Going right back to the phones for our last call of the evening, but David in South Carolina noting Dollar General. He says they do allow for people or groups of people to buy a franchise and manage it. The Dollar General Corp can do as much or as little as the contract allows. So at least there's a little of the small business situation to it. Several folks around here got together and put up $5,000 or so to purchase a franchise, and they're doing quite well. So maybe I picked the wrong corporate entity, but I understand what David's getting at. William writing in simply, Albert is on the money. Ron in Raleigh says, I could tell you stories. Actually, Art Pope looks a lot like Karl Rove, doughy white guy in his late 50s, balding with wire-rimmed glasses. To give a slight correction, Mr. Pope made his fortune buying old Roses and other dime stores, leaving them in their shabby condition, bringing in the aforementioned cheap crap. We also have we have to thank him for the teabag and horse's asses on the Wake County School Board. You remember the Wake County School Board is the school board that tried to roll back desegregation. So, you know, there's an object lesson here, and that is that, you know, it's not always the Koch brothers. Yeah, if you see the Georgia Pacific stamp on any paper product, put it the hell down. Even if you got to pay a little bit more, put it down. Because you're funding the people that hate you. Consumption choices are moral choices. Okay? And back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Brandon from Brooklyn.
Hey, Brandon. How you? Oh, my God. Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm a little hoarse because I was at the Occupy Wall Street rally last night with my wife. I participated in that live mic where you project your voice so you can help carry the message through the crowd.
Right.
Yeah. I just want to say that the whole event, it's not an event. It's a movement. It's real. The kids that are there, you know, they're intelligent. They have a sense of what's going on. To quote from the movie Dune, the sleeper has awakened. I mean, to answer Mike Malloy's question, what is it going to take? How much pain are people going to put up with before they take it to the streets? This is it. They are taking it to the streets. And I don't think this is going to stop or slow down. I think this is only going to grow. But I really just wanted to say, you know, to all the right-wing media out there, the Bill O'Reillys, the Rush Limbaughs, the Sean Hannitys, the Larry Kudrows, who all denigrate and dismiss and curse and spit and just defame them in any way they can, they are not there. They need to go there. But we know the truth. They will not go there because they don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear the sad stories. Now, I wasn't there last night to interview people. I didn't get stories. In fact, when we got there, we were just taking in the movement. We were taking in the energy. And they were promoting peace, harmony, coordination, and getting together, and just a general sense of camaraderie.
And community.
And community. That's right. I mean, the clarion call has been made. We are the 99%. And to the parties out there, it's simple. Whose side are you on? Are you on their side, the 1% Wall Street elite, or are you on our side? Because there's a lot of people there, you know, a lot of them are kids, they're in school, they have debt, and they're wondering, what kind of job am I going to get? And I'm saddled with all this debt.
And they know it's their world that's being screwed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They don't have to pinpoint what's wrong. They don't have to pinpoint and present an exact point-by-point agenda. They know what's wrong. They have a sense. In fact, on Keith Olbermann's show the other night, he read their declaration. They know what's wrong. They know what's going on. They just and for Larry Kudlow to suggest that they're un-American, excuse me, their main point is to restore balance in the political process. They want America to be representative of them. They want their government to reflect the 99% because they see the injustice of it. They see that the government is representing the 1% Wall Street elite and all their agents in the government. It can't get any plainer than that. I mean,
It's only difficult to comprehend if you are so dadgum determinedly dense that you refuse to let it be what it is.
Yes, it is truly organic. I mean, there's no big money behind them. I mean, you got some major celebrities coming out there showing their support, and it's good. And I think it'll only get better. I mean, but as you discussed tonight, you see the other Occupy actions occurring in small town America and big town America and all across the country. The people are awake. They are hip to the game. They see what's going on. This isn't a political stunt. This isn't a bunch of stoners or dirty hippies. These are kids, and I see old people there too. I see people from all walks of life. Like I said, I didn't interview the crowd. I just took it all in. And they are somewhat organized. I mean, there's a nerve center there so that they can, you know, it's all social media. You know, they have, committees there that deal in all different aspects. It's all about, you know, their infrastructure of the movement. You know, they know that they are a collection of individuals forming a community. You know, there's no one centered political entity within the body. It is just people coming together who all realize one thing, that their voice is not being heard, and they've had enough. Now,
thank you, Brandon. I have to interrupt. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah,
I wish there was more of your voice that we could hear. We'll be here Monday night. If there's any way that you can expand upon your report, I sure would appreciate it.
I will definitely call you Monday. You guys have a great weekend, and to all the Horn family, you know, keep on keeping on.
Thanks, Brandon.